place to go. Have no place to go. Darling, have no place to go. Have no place to go.
Good morning, Chicago. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. It's the Steve Cochran Show. I'm Justin Kaufman in for Steve this week as he is jet setting in Prague. How about that? Right now, you know, he's what time would it be in Prague? It's a couple hours.
It's 11 o'clock at night.
He's
11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
No, I don't.
No?
I don't think so. Not yet. I'm not sure. What time was his flight? It was late in the day.
Uh-huh. His flight is actually on Saturday, so he didn't need to take any of that stuff off. But anyway, let's pretend.
Okay,
that Steve Cochran is there, yeah, and he's enjoying a Czechoslovakian beer.
I think he's in London, actually. I don't know. Amy Cochran posted on Facebook that she was in
this
London.
This is like...
he did have a layover.
That's
yes. right.
That was like
right.
a couple
right.
hours ago.
All right, well, he's in Heathrow right
yes.
now.
Yes. But Justin, the important thing is that you are here
yes.
filling in.
That's right.
Okay,
I'm excited to be here. It's great to be with this team. Yeah,
let's call him.
Yeah, he
no,
should be
really.
Awake.
He'd probably love to talk to us.
We are going to talk to him tomorrow.
Yeah, so but I mean, let's talk to him during his travel.
Bug him every day.
He'll be in a really crabby mood.
Yeah, you make the call, Dave, because you know how much he's going to love
Dave,
that.
We're going to put that on you, buddy. That's going to be your assignment for the morning.
No problem.
Yeah, he'll call and he'll say, hi, this is Mark Carmen.
Yeah, right. There you go. Just disguise your voice. All right, it's the Steve Cochran Show this morning. We're excited to take you through this morning and the morning commute and everybody who's getting ready to go to work. Tough night of flooding and storms that move through the area, and we'll talk a little bit about that. And Mary, I'll keep you up to date on some of the roads. I heard you this morning, Mary, talking about a little bit about Orland Park and some of the other...
Yeah, that always gets flooded.
Yes.
Orland Park, it's been the same spot for a couple days now.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of hydroplaning going on. If you were just driving, on the Eisenhower, or, you know, this morning, there was a lot in the right lane.
Oof.
Approaching Ida B. Wells, right by
That's
the post
tough.
Office. Yeah, be careful
it's just,
there.
Obviously, it's a safety issue, but it's also just tough when it becomes a morning commute and it gets and there's standing water on the road.
I don't think it's supposed to rain anymore, though, right?
Nope, I think we're in the clear. But
the radar's all clear now. So
good.
All right. Well, we got much to talk about tonight or today. So I'm already getting the lights and there's no lights.
Yeah,
in here.
You're normally at night.
Yeah.
So
Eric Adelstein and Pat Brady coming in studio today in the 7 o'clock hour. It is Politics Thursday. And what a perfect opportune time to talk with both of them about what's happening at Capitol Hill today. Impeachment proceedings will begin with Kurt Volker, who's a special envoy to Ukraine. He was it's interesting, like trying to piece this together. Dan Sinker, who's a great Chicago journalist, he was the guy who had the fake Rahm Emanuel Twitter when Rahm Emanuel started.
Yeah,
he has created a website that is just called impeachment.fyi. And the whole point that he did is just saying, this is the info in chronological order because it's such a confusing story and people get confused. And there was a piece that came out on Twitter, I think today, about a poll that I think this exhibits what I'm talking about. Is I think it was 41% of Republicans believe that the name Joe Biden was not referenced in the call to Ukraine by the president. Even though the president has already released the transcript and said he did,
I think we get
very partisan in this world that they're even the littlest things, like the details, the facts.
You're saying that this site that he's created is unequivocally factual.
It's just straight ahead.
There's no opinion. It's just
it's not like reading a CNN article
or a Fox article or anything. It's just straight
ahead.
Right?
It's actually done in a way where it's kind of chunky, kind of paragraphs.
I do hear a lot of media people admonishing, you know, people for being like, oh, you should do your own research. You should, you know, make sure that you're reading. You should make sure that you're staying up to date. And even for me, it's difficult to figure out where do I find actual straight information. And, you know, there are, of course, sites that I go to, but, you know, it's always great to put that out there.
I still believe in the power of the press and the power of journalism.
Oh, absolutely.
And I believe when I read the newspapers that they're...
I mean, the freedom of the press is part of having a democracy. I mean,
the hard part about this story, and I think it's going to get even worse, is that you have... The sources that the newspapers and the press use are partisan. And the Democrats will give a source and say, this is the fact. And then the Republicans will give a source and say, this is the fact. And so you end up just believing what you believe.
total random aside, because you're recommending something, but last night, because I know, I mean, one, I want everyone to be safe when it's raining and flooding and everything, yeah, but when it's raining, it also, like, do you find that you're able to relax a little bit more, because you can kind of, like, watch something, and before I go to bed, I should be reading, but instead I started watching a new Netflix series called Inside Bill's Brain.
It's about Bill Gates.
And the work that he's doing through the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, man, it made me feel like such a worthless human being. But it did give me hope for the future. And I hope that every billionaire listening does something good with their money, as he is doing, trying to save the world from, you know, very minor diseases that most of the developing world has already conquered.
Gee, that's a great way to approach any Netflix series. Does this make me feel worthless?
I felt worthless, but listen, I felt inspired, because I thought, wow, now this is a man whose life is making a difference for millions around the world, and everyone should watch it.
I'll check out that, and I'll check out Ryan Murphy's The Politician, which
I saw all
amazing.
Of it. I already binged it over the weekend.
Watch it. This weekend, that's what I'm going to do.
It's
is it good?
So good.
It's
yes.
so good.
It's a wonderful satire and reflection of the current political mood.
I love it. All right, great. Well, we've already got our recommendations out of the way this morning on the Steve Cochran Show. 312-981-7200. We got a great show lined up this morning, and like I said, we're gonna cover everything, including the top 666, which is up next.
Sunrise Hotel. It's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
With the top 666. Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. The 60 Minute Men.
All right, let's get to the top 666 this morning. Flooding in the area overnight as big storms rolled through. Road closures all over the collar counties, including in the south suburbs, as Mary mentioned. On the north side of Chicago, Lakeshore Drive was shut down in both directions last night because of flooding from Lake Michigan. Lakeshore's been reopened this morning, so no fear, but wow. That blows my mind when that happens, because there's going to be flooding in certain areas just based on the landscape. But when you get flooding on Lakeshore Drive, that's literally the lake. that's literally big waves on a lake that have spilled over into the road. That's the part where you're like, oh, yeah, we're next to a huge body of water. That's nature.
It's one of the most beautiful drives ever. But then you realize just how it is right there on the lake, and it can be super dangerous.
It's amazing. And it also, you know, when you think about climate change, that Lakeshore Drive is
Dave
not going
to be...
Dave
looks like he's about to say something.
Not going to be around for much longer.
No, I think those days in November where the wind's really churning up the lake and the waves are splashing across the drive.
There's nothing more, I would say, just I don't even know what the word would be, dangerous and also majestic than seeing a wave, a huge Lake Michigan wave, when you're on the bend right there in Lakeshore Drive, come up. You're like, yay, ooh. It's like the feeling is all at the same time.
But think of it like 80 years ago. I mean, my mother lived in an apartment building in the basement right next to the lake, and there was no Lakeshore Drive.
Right.
So she was literally, she used to, when it was hot, they used to go sleep on the beach.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah, she was right there. So today that could not happen because of, you know, climate change and everything, you know.
You get swept away while you were sleeping.
She used to tell me those stories. I was like, what? You slept on the beach?
You slept on the beach. Yeah, no, it's...
It sounds very romantic.
You know, it was very interesting watching that that movie on, I think it was called Cooked, by Survival by Zip Code. It was about the heat wave in Chicago in 1995 and all the deaths. Mm-hmm. There was something to be said that there had been heat waves in the past, but because, just like you said, Mary, people used to sleep in the park, or they sleep in different areas because of safety. There wasn't safety concerns as there is
and
now.
And there wasn't air conditioning.
Right, so you would go out and people would just sleep in the park, and that's how you would beat the heat if you didn't get stuck and suffocated in your apartment. Yeah. But in 1995, that wasn't an option anymore because of dangerous neighborhoods and other things. So that also led to the problem of what happened with that heat wave. So very interesting. Yes. No longer can you sleep on the beach.
No.
Next, impeachment hearings take center stage on Capitol Hill today, as U.S. Special Envoy to Ukraine, Kurt Volker, is supposed to testify before Congress. It's going to take place behind closed doors. They love the behind closed doors.
I noticed from yesterday, behind closed doors tends to irk you a bit.
Yeah, I don't like it. Only because then you're relying on usually Congress... people to tell us what happened. And it, like I just said, it always is, you could put a Democrat and a Republican right next to each other, and they have wildly different interpretations of what just happened. And you sit there as someone who just wants to know what the facts are, confused.
You want transparency.
I want transparency. But
I'll let you sit through like a 9-hour testimony. You can sit through that, and then you can make a synopsis, and then I will just read the synopsis.
I just want the 30-second clip that I can... see on Instagram. That's all I need. That's a, just give me one of those. But Volker, it will be interesting because he is one of the guys that shows up in Rudy Giuliani's texts. Rudy Giuliani, when he was confronted about being the private lawyer for the president and he went to Ukraine, he said, "I was directed by the State Department. Take a look." And in the text, it was Kurt Volker. So it'd be interesting to see what Volker has to say in front of Congress today if we ever get the straight story on what he says. Next. Chicago Teachers Union emerged from their closed-door meeting. Emerged with a strike date.
There's a theme.
Yeah, it's October 17th. That's the strike date that has been set by the Chicago Teachers Union if they don't get a contract with CPS before this. 14 days here. And that's a Thursday, if you're wondering, which you know what that means. 4-day weekend.
For who?
For the kids.
Okay, I don't think they're...
That's not how it works?
No.
Oh, I thought this would be Thursday, Friday, Saturday. They get a, it's a 4-day weekend. Plus, you get Columbus Day at the beginning. Ah, kids got to be loving this.
Okay, poor parents. They have to figure out where to put the kids.
Yeah, exactly.
Let them run around. Let them sleep on the beach, right, Mary?
We know you're just being
You win
funny.
The Dad of the Year Award.
Exactly. Good call, Joe. Move it along. First, it was police officers yesterday. Now it's everybody else. Falling concrete on Lower Randolph has become a real problem as more cars were struck yesterday. Wow. Falling concrete.
Infrastructure is a problem.
I like it. It sounds like a problem. I don't want to sound like take one of Steve's bits, but it sounds like an indie rock band.
Well,
falling concrete.
What Steve Grzanich is saying is so true because there's a ton of bridges and underpass and overpasses, underpasses that are crumbling, and people don't realize how bad infrastructure is.
Yeah, the Engineers Association does a report every year on the status of bridges and overpasses and stuff like that in the U.S. every year, and every year it's a D rating on most of them.
Yeah.
So.
And this is a tough one because I don't know if you told me tomorrow that they were going to earmark millions of dollars for Lower Randolph, I'd say, get out of here. You know, it's not a huge amount of traffic coming through there as opposed to what you just said, Steve, bridges and other places that probably are way more important. I think you just got to put the nets up like they did at Wrigley. Remember when Wrigley had the problem with concrete? Yeah. They just kind of put the mesh up.
But the problem with that is the concrete is falling from the road deck above it. So that means the road deck above the street is not in good
condition. Secure either.
So the people who are up on top of it.
Whenever I'm walking under anything, I look up because I am terrified of something
coming down.
Because I was once walking on Lake Street underneath the L, because it's elevated there, and I was walking underneath the tracks, and somebody was walking in front of me, and something fell and hit them on the head.
Oh man!
And I said, I nearly escaped.
Do you stay indoors in the wintertime when it's falling ice?
I try to be like a ninja out there, like super great cat reflexes when it's like super windy and things are flying about. I'm like, people, this is dangerous.
You know, everybody does Orange Theory now and other kinds of workouts.
Maybe there should
be a new workout on how to avoid falling concrete, like just to get your agility up. What do you think, Dave?
I think that's a great idea.
Tough mudder,
I look at the signs, all the buildings right around us. They all have the sign, watch for falling ice. And
slippery conditions.
And I mean, okay, so really, if the ice is falling, what are you going to do?
I'm not looking up.
You're going to get hit in the face
right
by it. You don't want that.
What if we got new signs?
I'm looking up because I falsely believe that I could outrun it. The most unathletic person here.
You think you're going to look up and see the ice coming down on the concrete? And you're like, go.
By the time you see it, gee, it's too late.
Yeah, where are you supposed to watch? When they say watch for, it's like, okay, where? Do I look to the right? Do I look to the left? If I look up, you know.
Sure, it's just the liability thing.
I have a better idea, Steve Grzanich. Why don't we just invest in, helmets?
That's not a bad idea. I think everybody should just wear those bike helmets everywhere.
It's like shared, they have the shared scooters and the bikes. Now they have shared helmets. If you have to walk on Lower Randolph, you got to put a helmet.
How about like goalie helmets?
Yeah.
You know, you can personalize them, a little artwork.
You just take your debit card and swipe over it.
We can all be sponsored. Helmet.
Yeah,
right. On
you
our
can put
helmets.
Bluetooth in those helmets.
So the budget hole has to be filled.
Yeah.
I think we're on to something.
I'm just visualizing Dave Enick decoupaging a helmet. And I like this.
I don't think that's
happening. I like this picture.
Roquan Smith is back. The linebacker practiced with the team and is expected to play in Sunday's game against the Raiders in London. He was a late scratch for personal reasons on Sunday against the Vikings. And it's been a lot of... they've really gone with personal reasons. The coach won't even get into anything else about it. But as Roquan said, and as the coach says, is this behind us, Dave? I mean, is this something that we're just never going to know what happened?
Well, I mean, unless whatever the personal reason was recurs, which he said it's in the past, he's moving forward. And quite frankly, I think people ought to just say, okay, take him at his word. Yeah. And you have no reason not to. And let's move on.
I guarantee if in the first quarter of this game, Roquan Smith gets a sack, well, I'll be like, what happened?
It's just like his holdout last year. I remember coming in here with you in the morning. I can't believe this guy's not in camp yet. And look, he turned out to have a pretty good year.
I know. All right.
Go Bears!
Ina Garten. Did you see this? Ina Garten.
Yes, Ina Garten.
Ina Garten, sorry. The barefoot contessa from the Food Network. She announced she's writing a memoir. Now, here's the rub. The memoir should be completed in 2023.
And what is the problem? Are you complaining about the Barefoot Contessa?
No, I've seen the Barefoot Contessa. I don't really get into she's the best. And I don't have a problem with it. The problem I have is we're going to announce 4 years in advance that you're writing a memoir. You're not really writing it. You're going to sit down and do 3 hours of an interview, and a ghostwriter's going to write it.
No.
4 years?
Why should we be excited about this? I mean, I'm not a foodie at all, and I'm like,
guys,
who cares?
Okay, you guys just, you know what? You know what? Don't ever talk to me ever again.
You're a big
either of you guys.
Memory.
If you watch the show,
me in that group too.
Yes, if you watch the show, she is very compelling. She's very soothing. You can watch her cook. She worked for the White House, by the way.
She has an awesome
background. She's incredibly brilliant.
Yes.
She decided.
I agree.
She retired, she decided that she was going to start cooking. And my dream is to be Ina because she has a house in the Hamptons. She has an apartment in Paris.
But see, this is her appeal.
And she doesn't need a book.
She cooks for Jeff. You guys are negative Nellies, all of you. Very negative. I don't appreciate this early in the morning. Listen, if you like Ina, you're with me, okay?
Okay, so first off, I have no problem with Ina. I call her Ina, but I love Ina, right? The problem I have is, why are you 4 years? Why does it take 4 years to write a memoir?
Listen.
About cooking.
She's got a huge life.
Her life
is amazing.
No, we don't care about that either.
Oh.
All nice right. Long press tour.
Wow.
4 years.
You said, here's the rub, and I thought that was
a
cooking
cute.
Reference.
It was a pun. Yeah.
Oh, really?
I was thinking about it all night. That's why I was up all night.
You should make one of her chickens. Her roast chicken is unbelievable.
Her roast chicken.
She sold out the Chicago Theater when she
was
in town.
The only problem with making her roast chicken is it takes 4 years to complete, which I guess
throw it in the oven.
You're jealous.
It.
All of you guys are jealous.
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
Steve Cochran Show here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in for Steve, who's in Prague. We'll be back on Tuesday. The whole gang is here, though. All right, so I'm excited because I want to read some of the texts, of course, about Ina Garten. It goes both ways, G. I don't want to make it seem like everybody's on your side.
I don't feel that everybody should be and needs to be, but I just didn't appreciate all the haters like in the office right now in the studio.
Well, to be fair, the only hater was Vandeveld.
I don't hate it.
You sounded like it.
I'm just not jealous. No, good for her. It's wonderful. She's great. I don't even know who she is.
Probably not going to use a ghostwriter because, she worked at the White House, like I said.
Sure.
She worked in President Ford's and Carter's management and budget administration, and then she wrote the nuclear energy budget.
Wow.
She's kind of like, if you don't know who she is, she's kind of like modern. I'm just saying she's got to be smart and a good writer.
Yeah.
I'm just saying if you don't know her, she's kind of like a modern Julia Child. Not all as right. funny. But like a modern one.
608 says, I'm a huge fan of the Food Network, the Cooking Channel, etc. But if I have to watch Ina Garten make a chicken for Jeffrey one more time, I'll jump off a bridge.
I love Jeffrey. Jeffrey's her husband. They've like known each other since they were 15 years old.
630 says, Barefoot Contessa, overrated. What do you mean overrated? I love that. Overrated. How is someone who's on the Food Network overrated? I get that maybe you don't like the Barefoot Contessa, but The idea that that's something you would say about an athlete who doesn't perform, but this is a woman who cooks.
Oh, read the rest of that text.
Yeah, the rest of it is about a botched make-a-wish child.
She snubbed a kid?
But this is the issue with her, with Ina. I think that's why people are attracted to her, is because she does have kind of a controversial vibe where she can come across almost prima donna in a way, almost kind of maybe Martha Stewart-ish. But at the same time, she's so welcome and warm, which is not necessarily Martha Stewart, but
Martha Stewart's sassiness. I don't know, she's not everyone's cup of tea, but like, you can't blame her for what she's, I mean, she's been through a lot.
I had a run,
especially her show with Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great show. I had a run in with Martha Stewart one time where I was probably 21 years old, and I was in New York City, and I had just won a James Beard Award. And so we had just won. It was me and Steve Dolinsky.
You won a James Beard Award?
I won two.
It's so great to do radio with you
like, because these guys have heard all my stories.
By the way, yeah. He's in the Softball Hall of Fame.
Not yet, but...
I'm just
anyway,
beginning to realize that...
So what happens, this was when it was in New York. Now it's in Chicago. There was a Marriott Marquis is where you do it. And you get on stage. It was so weird. You know, I had my tux from Genghis, you know, my $60 rental. And they said my name. And we went up on stage. And it's all a blur because it's a huge auditorium. And there's all these chefs and everything. And it was before they split the awards.
Yes,
now they do press on one day.
And
they did it all together. So it'd be like best chef.
Got it.
And best local radio, like right next to each other. And so anyway, we won. And just like in those award shows, when you win, you go backstage with somebody who right away they hand you a glass of champagne, and you walk off and you get into this line to go up on the side stage where the press can ask you questions. They don't care about me, but you still got to stand in that line. I'm like,
so
wow.
Where does Martha come
Martha comes in right behind me. She was the next winner.
Oh, fantastic.
So they won for best personality, and it was Martha Stewart, so she did her speech, but I didn't see it because I was back. So she comes with her handler, and it's just her. You know, as her handler is like maybe on the phone, or there was before cell phones, but it was like, you know, like blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, and I turned to Martha Stewart. I go, hey, how about it?
What'd she say?
We're both winners. She didn't say a word.
You know,
she just looked at me and she gave a look, and she was kind of, she looked me up and down, like, look at that Genghis tux. And she's like, I gave me a little smirk, like, I think I like you because you don't belong here, but don't ever talk to me again.
You've got to earn it with somebody like Martha Stewart, you know? I got a chance to interview her after she went to jail and got out of jail, and she had
humbled.
Really hot, like, tight leather pants on. She was like feeling it. I definitely wouldn't want to work for her, for sure, but you know, you
but if you
say.
Were if you felt that you had a connection, meaning you won an award, then she was right there, wouldn't you say something to her, like,
oh,
hey,
yeah,
we're both winners?
I would say something.
I wasn't out of line to talk to her.
I would be afraid
absolutely
of her.
Not yeah, you should. That's your moment, go for it.
Right.
I mean, my thing is
didn't work
much,
out, but still
I've done so many of like these movie junkets, and then with my previous job with celebrities, pretty much any celebrity, I have to say, I just don't have a lot of high expectations that they're going to live up to the image that I have in my mind, because one, it's kind of an unfair image and it's crafted without really knowing them, but just their body of work. And two, like most of the time, like they don't really have, they're too busy. They're being interviewed by, you know, hundreds of people.
The relationship that you have with a celebrity when you're interviewing them is pretty cordial and formal, where you shake hands, but they're engaged. In this case, this was not about being interviewed. This was about two people in a back hallway.
You were like, hey,
and I was like, hey,
what's up?
I was like, where's the after party? Hey, Martha, do you have an address? Could you give me, I'm going to write that down.
She's like, don't talk to me.
Don't talk to me. Which could have, I just feel like that could have gone a different way. If she
was
opened up.
I love that you've used this this story about Martha Stewart to really let me know that you've won a James Beard
Award. I just want to let you have one, two. I don't want to make a deal.
Yeah, he slipped that in.
I slipped it in. I wish that would have gone a different way. Like if Martha would have gone, we are winners, and she cheers, and then she was like, "Hey, what are you doing later?" And I'm like, "Martha, I'm not doing anything." She probably, that could have been like where the insider trading was happening, or I could have moved her in a different direction in her life. The outcome would have been much different.
If only she had decided to be your friend.
If she would have decided.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You were telling me about another dilemma you have.
Oh, gosh. Dave, you're going to like this one. All right. So, you know, we work in this building. It's the 303 Wacker, and downstairs they have kind of a food court. And one of his Dunkin' Donuts, of course. I love, you know, go in there and get a cup of coffee.
It's kind of part of the Pedway.
Yeah, part of the Pedway. Mm-hmm. And when I was on the show in the morning, I would go and... Well, I had a great relationship with the women that work there. Like, we would just kind of shoot the breeze before we go up 5:30 in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning. But towards the end, I realized, and I had probably a year of communicating, I was walking away, and the woman said to me, she goes, "All right, have a great day, Dave." And, you know, my name's Justin, and said, and I didn't say anything because I was like, well, I don't really care. And I think it had something to do with,
thank you.
I just kind of said, all right, see you later.
So, anyway. Do you think she just thinks you're a Dave? Or do,
no,
do
I think
you
she thinks I'm a Dave.
Or do you think she thinks you're Dave Innit?
I think at some point or another, your name probably came up because we were getting coffee for Dave or something, you know, because Dave's a, Dave is a prima donna himself, and we had to get coffee all the time. No, but the somewhere along the line, the names got mixed up. So it's been a year because I've moved on to nights. She doesn't work nights, so I never see her.
So you saw
and
her
so
this morning.
So this morning, this is the second day in a row that I've been down there. We kind of got reacquainted, and I'm like, hey, good to see you. It's been so long. I'm doing the morning
show.
It's fun.
Back together again.
But do you know her name?
I don't know if I know her name.
Come on.
Yeah. I know. I get it. My point is, and I don't, the expectations, I don't care if she knows my name. We have a relationship. It's not personal. It's transactional, but at the same time, we're friendly. And that today she's walking away. She goes, have a great day, David. So she changed it to David, which is nice. It's formal of Dave. But the, I don't have the heart to say, after a year and a half of knowing her, it's actually Justin. I'm just Dave.
What did you order?
A coffee.
Okay, how did you order it?
Cream and sugar.
Okay, order it. Pretend yeah. I'm...
Hey, how's it going? Good to see you. Yeah, it's been a while. How's everything? How's your son? Well, good. Yeah, it's great. I'm going to get a... let me get a large cream and sugar.
Large cream. So what you need to do is... Yeah, how's your son? My name's Justin. How about a large cream and sugar?
Well, what does Justin want today? What if I just...
Okay,
did, like,
now the
person?
Real dilemma is what my previous gig, I worked there for 13 years, and there was a person that worked in the building that...
At Dunkin' Donuts?
No, not at Dunkin'. So when I worked over at ABC, yeah, there Wendy was a person Live, right. in the building at ABC, because I was at ABC even before Windy City Live, there was a person that... never knew my name, called me the wrong thing for 13 years, but then at a certain point, you can't really correct somebody.
Right, that's my point.
Like, at a certain point.
I don't want
point.
To.
So
I, don't want the,
like,
I don't want the embarrassment of it. Yeah,
I'm just
like,
going to
yeah.
let you... This will
do
be
what
our,
you do.
This will be our special thing. You can call me this. But, yeah.
And I don't feel at all... I don't feel bad. I don't...
Yeah.
I just don't want it to be an embarrassing... I like her, and it's like, I just don't want to...
Well, it's like, you see all those Starbucks memes on social media where people are definitely called the wrong thing, because the wrong name is written on the cup. But, you know, I have a different, you know, I don't feel that much sympathy for you, only right. because of my
because
name,
of your name right?
because
right.
it's G spelled J-I.
Right.
Really, my first name is G space Suk, S-U-K.
That's the full name, right?
That's the first full name. And last then, name is spelled Y-I.
Right.
So that's very confusing. I'm constantly called the wrong things. It's misspelled, yeah. sometimes even to the point that it's then like a cuss word, like the S-U-K part.
So should we really be calling yeah. you G-Suk or...
No, because I think
G's like an, like,
that's kind
a nickname,
of
yeah.
Yeah.
That, yeah. And then do you know how many times I've been confused for Linda Yu and Judy Sue?
No.
All
that's
the
ridiculous.
Time. No, all the time. And Linda Yu's like my adopted mom, so I love her.
I think those women are spectacular.
They're gorgeous. And, yes, but no. So all the time. So
they're
like,
a lot older
be,
than you.
They'd be like, no, well, not that. But they'd be like, Judy. They'd be like, Linda. And I'd be like, yeah, nice to see you.
The idea, and again, I have nothing but respect for the people we're talking about, but the idea that someone would be like, oh, Linda Yu, to you. That's, I mean, again, a Hall of Famer, amazing
yes,
journalist,
absolutely.
Looks nothing like you.
Yes, she is my...
And it's a different generation.
Yes, but, you know, I'm like, all right. She does look, she's ageless. She hasn't aged at all. She's like Dave Innit. Dave Innit doesn't age.
Dave's not here!
Dave, you and I... you, just, that would be like if people came up, well, exactly like people coming
I'm
up and
gonna,
say, calling me Dave.
We're not going to correct them, though, because then they're going to feel awkward.
I don't
like that. So I just be like, yeah, great to see you. Thanks for watching.
Well, if I go down there and she calls me Justin, then I'm really going to be confused.
Mary Zamberg just texted in and reminded me. She's been calling me Dave for a while now. She's been, and I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. I don't have a problem with it. I will go by Dave. I'm honored because it is, she thinks that I'm Dave from the morning show, and it's Dave Innit, so I will take that and put that on my resume. How about that? Does that work?
Be my guest. See how far that gets you. Might not even get you a free coffee.
Yeah, right. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number.
Dave's not here.
Steve Cockertrell here on 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman in for Steve today. We got a pair of tickets to give away, so why don't we do that? 312-981-7200 to the seventh caller. We'll give you a pair of tickets to Silver Creek Rockin' Brew Fest, which is coming up on Sunday, October 27th from 3 to 7 at night. Enjoy 20 local breweries and live music from Elton John and Tom Petty tribute bands. You can get the tickets at Ticketmaster.com. Rockin' Brew Fest, October 27th at the Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo. Yeah. That's a good place. 312-981-7200. Seventh caller will give you those tickets. How about that? Great texters texting in right now that are giving me advice on what to do down at Dunkin' Donuts. they said 312 said, get the Dunkin' app. Then when you order the coffee through the app before you go, it'll have your name on it when you pick it up. Then she'll know your real name. Problem solved.
I have a better...
Viv's got an idea.
Yeah, I got a better idea. So if you go downstairs, just... fake a phone call. I know it's early, so you're not talking to anybody at 5 o'clock in the morning. But just grab your phone and just answer it and just say, hey, this is Justin. And then they'll hear
Justin
you.
Here.
Beep, boop, boop, yep, boop. Yep.
That's my phone.
Beep, yep, boop, yep, boop, boop. That's right. Yep. It's Justin. Like I said, Justin.
You're a gopher, Justin.
Or we'll come downstairs with you and somebody can say, hey, Justin, we'll have a conversation.
Oh, yeah, we could do the old school.
Honestly, you could do what Dave suggested and just say, hey, you know, I've been working in this building a long time. I've never caught your name. And she'll say her name, and then you'll say, I'm Justin.
No, you can't. I can't do that.
Oh,
because then she'll be like, I've been calling you Dave for a year and you didn't correct me.
What?
Like, that's what I'm worried about. I'm okay with being Dave.
Maybe she's hearing this whole conversation right now. Next time you go
in
there, I'm so sorry I called you Dave.
Just wear a name tag, maybe. Just be like, okay.
Hello, my name is Justin.
I like that idea.
Here we go. This is Justin.
Well, I mean, you know, you could just, who knows? You know, she may not even be thinking about you that much. She may not even be that big of a deal to her.
I don't think she is. Give me a break. She's not. Yeah, like the idea that I'm like, oh, she's going home at night being like, I wonder what Dave's doing.
Self-obsessed much?
Yeah. 224 says, my name is Jeannie, and a new coworker called me Janine when I got, I tried to correct her with Jeannie, but then she heard Gigi, so now she just calls me Gigi, and she likes it.
So that's one of the things. So on my Uber app and my Lyft app, I always go by Gigi, because G is a little still too confusing, and when I say G, people hear Jean. And so they're always like, hi, Jean. And that's why I always say, if you noticed, when I meet guests, I always say, hey, my name is G, like the letter G. But the guy over at ABC that called me the wrong name for years and years, who's the most sweet and lovable human being on the planet, which is why I never corrected him for 13 years, he would call me Sookie. Like, G-Sook. So we call you Sookie. But it was like, hey, Sookie. So I was like, okay, you know what? You're adorable.
I don't know if he's getting a name wrong. He just came up with a cool nickname and he's sticking with it. A creepy nickname.
Well, it's G-Sook. So.
Yeah, right. No, I know.
It was never creepy because he was adorable.
All right. Yeah. Well, if not adorable, it would be
creepy.
And
isn't there a song? Isn't there like a Sookie in a song? No? I don't know. Super Joe?
How about this one? This is from 312. I've been calling my wife Linda for 6 years. Her name is Lisette.
Now that would be a problem.
That's hilarious. I'm getting a lot of good advice here. 312-981-7200 if you have advice on someone who's been calling you the wrong name for you. I'm not even that mad about it because it really doesn't matter. At the end of the day, the relationship doesn't change. I still like her. She likes me. I like talking about. I know a little bit of details about her life. She has a little bit about mine.
Since tomorrow's Friday and you're going to be here tomorrow, I suggest that when you go get your coffee tomorrow, you just say, "Hey, I've been here for so long, and I've never gotten your name.
No way.
Can you please tell me what's your name?" And she'll tell you, and you'll be like, "I'm Justin." Yeah.
She knows you're on the air, right?
I don't know. No, okay. I don't think
she doesn't know about his life. She doesn't care.
She does. She knows about my son Miles because he's come in there with me. No, I mean, and she talks about her son who's in high school. And I mean,
So your relationship is.
I mean, the relationship has evolved in a way that it's small talk. It's not like you know, and
right.
I don't know. I feel like it's good, but at the same time, you know, it's the wrong name. That's all.
You know what I feel like doing? I feel like going to Dunkin' downstairs today.
No,
Then just be like, oh, you know, by the way, you know, Justin, we were talking about you on the air this morning, and then I'll just have a picture of you.
Don't do it.
Be like, this is Justin.
All right. Steve Cochran Show here on 720 WGN. Rolling along. Stay with us. All right. It is Thursday. So coming up in the 7 o'clock hour, Pat Brady and Eric Edelstein here to talk politics. And today is going to be a doozy. So we'll have that conversation coming up on the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
Steve Cochran Show, rolling along here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, and I'm in for Steve today as he is in Prague until Monday. He'll be back on Tuesday, but the whole gang is here. And we continue with the program. Coming up, Pat Brady and Eric Edelstein will be here to talk about what to expect from Capitol Hill today, where Kurt Volker will do a closed-door meeting with Congress to talk about his involvement in the, I guess, not just a phone call to Ukraine, but just how the State Department has was involved with it. So we'll talk with those guys about that coming up. Reading your text this morning, a lot of people chiming in on how to fix my issue with the with being called the wrong name for a year. 309 says, for years, my sister thought my now husband's name was Alvin. His name is Alan.
I like the name Alvin.
Alvin!
Chipmunks, yeah.
First few weeks at a new job, 619 says, I let someone call me Michelle. My name's Heather.
Wow.
That's when someone corrected him, he looked so embarrassed, and I felt so bad for not correcting him sooner. That's my situation, right? Someone else had a great point. They said, you should just go down there. 262 says, just tell her you never had the guts to say anything and that you weren't man enough to say anything before. And now you've been chided into coming clean. Like, make it about me. I say it's sort of, I'm sorry, I'm such an idiot. My name's not Dave.
All these things are true, though.
It's true.
You wouldn't be putting on a show, you know?
You know, I did read an interesting article. You're on Instagram, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, social media, it seems every time you're on social media, you see a proposal.
Yeah.
And it seems like with asking someone to prom even, but especially asking someone to marry you.
It's got to be so big, right?
People do it so big, and they make it so public. And in this article, they're saying, please, men, stop insisting on proposing in public, and that really only 15% of women want their proposal to be public. So like in a ballpark or at a big theater or in front of lots of people. Like, how did you propose to your wife?
Yeah, it was private. It was there was a limo involved. That's the extent of the public it was that I had to book a limo. It was like kind of like a trick kind of thing where I was picking her up from. I used to pick her up from work, and then the idea was that it was just a random Thursday right before Christmas break, and I was like, "Well, yeah, I'm just coming to pick you up now." And I showed up in a limo and had flowers and the whole bit. And that was how.
Now, Dave, did you do a giant proposal because you know all the stadiums and like you're the legendary sports reporter?
No, and plus, I think the elaborate proposal is kind of a recent phenomenon. I don't remember. I think it was just, maybe get down on a knee. Maybe there's a ring involved. But other than that, I mean, when my son proposed, it was like he had a photographer hidden in the bushes.
Well, that's the thing now.
That's what they do, yeah.
The person taking the pictures, yeah.
Yeah, it says that, almost 45% of wedding proposals now happen in public places, and that is up 34%.
Wow.
Don't these guys, don't they realize that she could say no?
Yeah, that's one of the talking points.
You know, you got to worry about that.
And only 15% actually want a public proposal. And this is from a study. But
I'm in that 15%. I'm with that. I don't want anything public. When I'm at a baseball game or something and they put it on the Jumbotron, I'm just like, all right.
But
who's up next?
You're at a lot of games. You see that a lot, Dave? Like when you're at...
No. I mean, once in a while you'll see one. And then... Yeah. Now, actually, after the Wisconsin Northwestern game on Saturday. We were hanging out in Madison with some friends at over by the Student Union there outside, and a wedding party came in, and we were sitting. We had a bunch of chairs around a table, and this guy comes over and in a tux, right, and says, "Can we take a couple of your chairs?" This was for the wedding pictures. Well, the chairs we were sitting in, we didn't even notice, or that they wanted, were green and gold.
Oh, Packer.
They wanted color chairs that I didn't even notice the color of the chairs at this table. So I said, well, I don't really think we can let you do that.
You've got to be more conscious, Dave. There, I know. People take pictures of that. They get viral on that.
Oh, I know.
They see that Dave Ennett sitting in a green and gold chair.
I wasn't sitting in one. Actually, was at the table.
Yeah. I'm just saying, you know. Like, yeah. You need a publicist with you to make manage your image.
But that seemed a little elaborate.
Yeah.
Well, it's all about getting on the Jumbotron. And Justin, I don't know if you know this, but our executive producer, Vivian, her boyfriend lives in California. They've been dating for over a year, and we've had him on the show. His name is George.
All right, George.
And we are awaiting a proposal from George at any moment. And so I want to know from Viv if she wants.
Any moment.
Does
George know this?
Guys, stop it, G. No.
I just, like, do you want a big to-do proposal on a Jumbotron? Because I feel like Dave could help make this happen.
Gosh, I don't know.
Would you, regardless of George's situation, your situation, would you like that kind of thing as a woman to be sort of proposed to in public?
I mean, I want it to be special. I want it to be different. I don't want it to just be like, hey, will you marry me? And we're just like walking down the street.
Why not?
You
know?
Well, let's do it.
I bet you there's so many.
Those are the best ones, I think.
Really,
Mary, the ones that are spur of the moment.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, these big elaborate things, it's like, come on.
I don't know, though, Mary. If a guy were like, hey, we got nothing better to do. Let's just go do it.
That's what my husband did.
No.
You know, I mean, we didn't do anything. I mean, what do you think?
Well, it wasn't quite like that, but he did give me a beer tap instead of a ring.
Okay, well,
that's all right.
That's cute.
It's all right.
Well, I didn't get the ring yet, but...
Well, Viv, do you want your family there when he proposes?
No.
Right.
I would just want it to just be me and him. Are you just taking notes? Are you, like, texting this to George right now? What's happening?
Nobody knows what I'm doing over here. This is just a random... This is a text
Poor
question.
Guy.
I just wanted to know how, you know, what people thought.
Oh, my gosh.
That's all.
I had dated my wife for 5 years before the proposal. And, frankly, to be very honest and very frank, I don't talk about this as much. We already knew we were going to get married. Like, I kind of got the ultimatum that was like... You know, if we're not going to get married, then what are we doing here?
But you still want to do something nice.
Yeah, so the idea, but it was anti-romantic in the way that it was like we were already calling marriage halls, you know, or reception halls before there was any proposal. So,
but was there any element of surprise? You said
yes, there was an element of surprise, but I don't think it was a surprise that there... I wasn't in a situation where I was going to get a no, if that makes sense. It wasn't like the kind of traditional, oh, she doesn't see it coming, let's see, you know, if we're going to spend our life together. We're already calling around to see what dates were available for getting married. So it was almost anti-romantic.
Dave, how many years have you been married now?
I've been married 34 years, Mary. Is that it?
I like how you almost lost your voice.
34.
Dave and I got married.
We
the
got
same
married
year.
Not to each other, okay. But we got married the same year,
like, month apart. Yeah.
So now, are you going to do something big at 35? Like, you're going to renew your vows? Are you going to do? You got to buy her a nice gift? Something.
I don't think we're going to renew our vows. I think those vows they're still good.
Yeah, I'm not doing that either, Dave.
That's another thing too. People renew their vows.
Dave, I'll renew my
vows
with you. How's that?
Yeah, there we go.
Show marriage. Yeah, show marriage, right? Yeah.
Since we've been together, 20 years?
That's a great little radio stunt, right? We should do a show marriage. Dave Ennett and Mary Vanderbilt.
Yeah,
the vows would be all about traffic and sports. What do you think?
There you go.
I don't know if 35. I mean, my parents were married 66 years.
Oh, wow.
And so I...
That's
you know,
so
30,
beautiful.
34, 35... It's a good start.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
But, you know.
So to you, that's not even a big deal.
I mean, I didn't say that. I didn't say that. But I think that, you know, maybe we'll do something for 40.
Well, I want to know what the listeners think, because I want to know if they're
coming
worst proposal ever.
Well, let's try some. 717 says, my husband proposed to me in the parking lot of my job while I was carrying a case of wine.
That's a good
one. We've been married for 12 years.
Oh, well, that kind of, you could just crack open the wine.
My wife originally proposed to me, but she didn't have a ring, so I said no. I told her to be prepared next time. I proposed later that evening with a ring.
That's a good one.
Aww,
that's good.
That's sweet.
Be prepared. I won't accept it.
I don't think I'd want it to be too casual of a proposal. Like, hey, let's just go do this. This is as good as it's going to get. You don't want that.
A lot of mumbling. 262 right. Says, my engagement was very low key. Let's see. It was just a... there we go. Sorry. Jumped. My husband and my mom's engagement was worse because she didn't know she was engaged. She went to my dad's house. All her friends were like, congrats. And she's like, for what?
Oh.
But it worked.
So they jumped the surprise.
So either they jumped the surprise, or maybe they're just like, congrats, it happened. Maybe he did what, like you were talking about. Well, you wanna,
did you ask your wife's father for her hand?
It's a big issue in my family. I did not.
What?
I know. And I feel like it was more like a missed thing on the to-do list than like any sort of snub of my family. Because I love my in-laws. I love them. But it's just funny. It was like, I feel, it's a little bit more, the dynamic was a little bit different, you know. So I don't think that it was, I probably in our family, it would be, you know, I would be probably asking my wife's mom for hand, that kind of thing. Yeah. So, but at the same time, that was something that I think just as a young guy, I was like, oh yeah, I got to get the flowers. I got to do this. I got to call her dad. And then I just was like, you know, I don't think I need to call the dad. The flowers, they'll be all right. I shouldn't need flowers. Like, it's like, I'm just going to stay here and play video games. So it wasn't necessarily my best foot forward. All right, let's do this. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Eric Edelstein, Pat Brady. We'll talk about the politics of the day, and we'll continue to take your texts on marriage proposals. If you got good low-key marriage proposals, we want to hear about them. 312-981-7200. Or if you got married in public, so we can test the theory.
Or if you got turned down in
public. Or if you got turned down, right?
That's even better.
So many great texts about proposals coming in here on the Steve Cochran Show. 630 says, we were on the dance floor at a friend's wedding. She looked up at me and she said, what am I going to do with you? And I said, marry me. She left me hanging the rest of the night.
That's a romance. I love that story.
But it gets better. She left me hanging the rest of the night, and then she said yes on their kiss goodnight.
That's so sweet. That's a good proposal.
Yeah, I don't know. If you're like, marry me, and she's like, I'm going to go get some more water.
She's making
and you're just
him
like, then you're stuck. I don't know.
Making him sweat it out. But that's why you don't want to do a public proposal. You never know if they're going to say yes.
There's also one from Christine who says, proposal 1,000 miles away in college on the phone. Oof. Ooh, that's a tough one. I mean, I guess if that's the life you're living, it's, you know, it's not, that's the way it is, long distance, that maybe that's, you got to get to the phone. You got to do it right then. It's a tough one. Let's see. 773 says, after dating for 10 years, we had a family dinner with my parents so I could ask my dad's permission, and then he never asked me. The ring came out, and they all started planning, but he never actually proposed. That's great.
I want you to introduce Pat and Eric, because I want to ask them how they proposed.
Pat Brady, Eric Edelstein here on Thursdays. Of course, they do politics, and Eric, Democrat consultant, Pat, a Republican consultant, and they like to mix it up. And the perfect day for you guys to be here, as it's going to be fireworks on Capitol Hill as Kurt Volker will be testifying. Closed door. I don't like the closed door. Closed you guys door. Like the closed door? Is it better or worse for you guys?
For us,
I mean, just as viewers, as lovers of politics, you like that vibe.
You want to see more of the show, I guess. But you know, I think these days you pretty much find out all the salient parts pretty quickly here.
Before we get into the nitty gritty, though,
the proposal.
Yes.
Well, Pat had said he's been doing the Cochran Show by himself, and he called me up and he said, "Would you be willing?"
Not between the two of you.
He said, "No,
it's another show wedding."
I said, "I'm going to get some more water. I got to talk to my parents."
Yes. I know this is a marriage.
And it's a Jewish Catholic thing too. It's like very complicated.
Oh, you mean like marriage?
Yes, not your radio marriage. I know this is. I know this is a marriage made in heaven.
Which can get rough at times. The therapist said I'm not supposed to take everything Eric says seriously. It would be great if we could start with your vows. That would be the great way to start political Thursdays.
My story's not that great. Other like lots of people, I had a whole thing planned, and the ring was burning a hole in my pocket, and aww, I just couldn't wait. So I just pulled the trigger early during the day.
Smart.
And her reaction was, "What the hell is this?" Yeah, I did have a friends of ours who. He put the ring in the souvlaki at a Greek restaurant. And that marriage didn't last.
That's what someone just said here. They put their ring in a wine glass.
Yeah.
And then they said she drank it, so don't use red wine if you're going to do that.
Or a bigger diamond.
Yeah, or a bigger diamond, right. There's amazing. We're going to get through these throughout the show, because there are literally hundreds of people texting in with their proposal stories. We're going to have to do that.
Yeah, but Pat, you can tell us quickly.
Yes, get off the August 19th, 1995, and we were both drunk.
Okay. How romantic.
That was that was the basis of our relationship. She was from Wisconsin.
No, it was very nice.
That's great.
Very
well, thank
casual.
You both for sharing.
All right, so we're going to take a break. We're going to come back, and we got to talk about today. We've got Eric and Pat for the second half of this hour, and there's obviously a lot that's happening when it comes to the inquiry for impeachment with President Trump, and we will get into what today's hearing means. And also, you know, as it seems like every seems like every 10 minutes a new story comes out on this that deepens what's happening in Washington. So we'll have that conversation coming up on the Steve Cochran Show here on 720 WGN. All right. No break. Sorry about that. All right. So we're
even better. Yeah. More time.
More
right?
time. Yeah. So do you guys think, I mean, honestly, do you think that there will be something that comes out of this hearing? Do you believe that when we see the special envoy to Ukraine come out today and the congressman come out and talk about what he said, that there will be new news?
I hope not, because the whole purpose of an investigation, particularly this that might have national security implications, the public should not know. There are certain things we shouldn't know until it's appropriate to disclose them. So I hope he can go in there, any of his witnesses can go in there, and it can be kept secret like it should be, and we will find out one way or another as to what actually happened with this phone call. But I do think that the Democrats, with this impeachment investigation, they're doing the three things right now to give Donald Trump the presidency. They're going to nominate a Northeastern liberal, they're going to try to impeach the president, and they're going to keep putting Hillary Clinton out to talk about the campaign, how her election was stolen. I mean, the three things you're going to, a Republican strategist, you got to go, wow, this is good for us.
Eric, quickly, your response to that?
I think I'd be hard-pressed to think that anything that's going on right now is good for Donald Trump. I mean, he's... You know, they always say that the presidency reveals character, and you know, I think we're seeing Donald Trump's character in spades. The way he's lashing out, calling for treason, calling it a coup. I mean, this kind of language is dangerous. I'm not going to get overheated and say, oh my goodness, how could he do this? I know how he could do this, because this is his MO. He wants to create chaos. And look, I think what we get out of today, who knows? But it seems pretty clear that Pompeo, the Secretary of State, and Trump wanted to blame the Ukraine envoy for all this stuff, so they pushed him out. And it's going to be interesting to see what this guy has to say.
Eric Adelstein and Pat Brady, because I see Pat already jumping in.
No, I just want to ask the role of an envoy. Maybe we can talk. I'm not sure if that's...
We got plenty of stuff to do, and we're going to get to it. So sure. We can keep going on, but we want to get to the headlines here with Steve Grzanich. Steve, give us the headlines, and we'll come back with Eric and Pat.
Listen to Adelstein and Brady.
Good to hear that they got your name in there.
I know,
Eric. That's
right?
Good.
Remember,
yes,
Justin, all those
years. Yeah, all those years it was just a Pat Brady jam.
I know.
And they put Eric Adelstein's name in finally. Eric and Pat are here. It is Politics Thursday. Yeah, it was a big thing. It was always a big, illustrious, you know, fireworks display for Pat Brady and Eric's.
I felt like the Pips to Gladys Knight. You know?
Well, it's been my role for 6 years now to educate Eric on politics, and he disappoints me some days, like I'm sure he's going to today, but other days he's really a good student, one of my best students.
Today the news, of course, we're talking about Washington, Capitol Hill, the closed door session with Kurt Volker, and right before the news we're talking about he's the special envoy for the U.S. to Ukraine. What does that mean? Is that a specific and traditional role?
It's not an appointed role. It's not even an official role. It's not a paid role. I think it is an official role. I mean, you go back and tell the president what you did, but it's not like being the ambassador.
Right. It's a strange way. So what role obviously we saw with Rudy Giuliani in the State Department, and he said the State Department directed me in this, and he showed text messages from Volker. Is that the reason he's on Capitol Hill today? Is it really just about his relationship with Rudy Giuliani?
I think it's broader than that. I think that they were using him to be the liaison with some of those Ukrainian officials, it sounds like. It also sounds like they were trying to blame him. I think that the fascinating piece is Pompeo's involvement in all this. And it seems like, if you read the tea leaves, Pat, that the irony is he was pissed off about Giuliani meddling in State Department stuff. Mm-hmm. So he probably got on that call. He probably inserted himself to say, I don't want Giuliani running wild on this thing. And now he's implicated in it.
Yeah. Could you imagine if you're Secretary of State and you see the president's lawyer out there talking foreign policy and national security? That's supposed to be his job.
Now, the big story with Pompeo, and this is the one that I think is a big piece today about the fact that people forget that Mike Pompeo, as a congressman, was the lead on the Benghazi investigation, and really talked about how the White House and the State Department were not complying with Congress, and that they were trying to obfuscate or obstruct. The tables have turned, and it seems like Congress is looking at this Secretary of State saying, hey, you're doing the same thing you did during Benghazi.
See, and G made the perfect point. This is the hypocrisy. And this goes to a bigger issue, which is why the American people think it's all a game and all a joke, and nobody stands on principle. If here's Pompeo, who railed for years against the State Department of Hillary Clinton, you're blocking Congress, you're not allowing us to do our constitutional duty, and then turns around and does the exact same thing on the other side, you know, people say it's all a game. Nobody believes in anything. It's all about advancing themselves. There's no principles at stake. That's a dangerous place to be.
Are there principles at stake in this? Is this? Do you believe, Pat, that this impeachment inquiry is legitimate?
I believe an inquiry is legitimate, but impeachment is inherently a political process. And if you go back and read what the Founding Fathers said about impeachment, by necessity, it's going to divide the country, a country that's already divided. So for me, it's bad for the country to go through this. We have an election in 12 months. I've been saying this for 3 years. Impeachment is bad for the country. We're going to have an election. And we tend to take our eye off things that are important, like what's going on in Hong Kong. And when you see at the same time this is going on, the President of the United States, supposed to be the leader of the Republican Conservative Party, congratulating the Communist Chinese for 70 years of existence when they have 2 million Muslims in a detention camp. Those are bad things that get ignored when we talk about the envoy going behind closed doors.
To flip that is the idea that the president brought this upon himself by trying to work on his reelection for campaign using the state when trying to dig up dirt on Joe Biden.
I agree with Pat. Nobody should be happy about impeachment, but I don't think there was a choice. I don't think the House Democrats had a choice. Trump's brought it to this, and you can't just continue to turn your back on illegal behavior and behavior that abuses that office. I wish we didn't have to do that. You know, the thing that concerns me, and Pat's absolutely right, you know, we've had these recall situations in California and Wisconsin and other places, and voters don't like it. They think it's an extraordinary step away from an election. They want to have the say in who gets elected, and they don't like it when there's sort of extraordinary steps that come in. But look, I don't think the House had much choice. I don't relish this process at all. But I don't think Trump's going to come out of this, whatever happens, ultimately in a good situation.
And nobody really knows whether in the long run it's going to hurt or help the Democrats.
That's right.
Do you think that the Dems are going to actually issue these subpoenas by Friday?
I do.
Okay.
I do.
And what happens if the subpoenas are ignored?
It goes to the courts, and then the federal courts, and ultimately, I mean, Pat would know better than I do, the Supreme Court. I mean, it's not unlike what happened with Richard Nixon, where they wanted the tapes turned over. They said it was executive privilege, and ultimately the Supreme Court said, no, you got to turn the tapes over to Congress. So,
yeah, and that's exactly what happened. I think, though, politically, where the Democrats kind of fall down on this, and the big issue here about the subpoenas is on getting his tax returns, which any prosecutor would have done, step one. But the reality is most people, I think anyway, that some about tax returns that really not at the government trying to get your tax return. Yeah. So that could be politically, whether it's legally right, it could be a political loser. I see a lot of political potential losers for Democrats. And I do think here in Illinois, which the Democrats will win overwhelmingly at the presidential level, this actually helps Republicans because it energizes the base downstate, which is heavily Trump land, where we have some pretty tough races. So I think in the long run here in Illinois, it probably helps Illinois Republicans.
Hmm. You know, I wonder at the end of the day, when you think about the president and the president's temperament, what effect that has on the Republican Party and the Republicans in Congress as they look to defend him and his actions. And you saw yesterday the press conference where he kind of lost his temper a little bit with the Finnish president. And
the poor Finnish president.
It was a very strange kind of press conference where he started to, and then he went off and he continued against Adam Schiff. But it just seems to me that is that going to be an issue? Because it hasn't been for Trump in the past, but I think we saw a different president yesterday.
I think people, even people who wanted to be more sympathetic to him, I've seen it in research that we've been part of in different states, that even Trump supporters are sort of very tired.
There's a fatigue to it.
They're tired of his, you know, his the way he treats people, the way he acts, the way he sort of abuses everybody. Look, I think we've talked about it a lot on this show in the past. I think the history of this era, it's the Republicans in the United States Senate that will be held accountable, and how they act. So far, they've enabled the entire Trump presidency. They've not been profiles in courage. They've,
you know, but I do
stand up.
I do think there was always a tipping point issue. Yeah. And I think we reached it actually this morning when he announced he's going to put a tax on single malt liquor. I think the Senate cannot abide.
No, that'll be Pat Breeden and Eric Edelsteiner here. We're talking politics today here on the Steve Cochran Show, and find out what's going to happen today on Capitol Hill. We'll continue the conversation.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Steve Cochran Show here. Justin Kaufman and Eric Edelstein, Pat Brady, are with us as they are every Thursday to talk politics, talking about, of course, you know, what's happening on Capitol Hill when it comes to impeachment. And, of course, the inquiry today will be a big day. Tomorrow could be a big day when it comes to subpoenas from Elijah Cummings and I forget which committee he's in, House Oversight in some form. All right, so let's get right to Trump has been masterful, as we were just talking about in the break, of really being able to project onto other people. We're seeing now that Adam Schiff is in his crosshairs, the congressman, about he should be treasonous, that he wrote the whistleblower complaint. Does that stick? Does that kind of stuff stick to Adam Schiff? And does that start to get people to think that this is political and there are cracks in the foundation?
I don't know. I mean, look, what Trump's been good at over the years is winning the day. You know, he's a good tactician. He's able to change the news cycle. He's able to, you know, kind of create another spectacle that people pay attention to. The problem he has in this situation is this isn't about winning the day. It's about winning an investigation over a long period of time. And as more people come forward and he behaves erratically, I think you get more Americans, even Trump supporters, former Trump supporters, saying, do I really want this guy in charge? And it causes a lot of angst and a lot of anxiety. So I don't think ultimately the sort of tactic of, oh, I'm going to sue Congress, which you can't do under the Constitution, and, you know, name calling with other
people. Or call it a coup, or right. Essentially say this is a witch hunt.
That's irresponsible and reckless language, but everyone sees it for what it is, which is he's a clown and irresponsible and doesn't respect anything. And I think that act wears thin.
Pat?
Yeah, I think one thing that did happen this week, which I was glad to see, because to me it's not even about the investigation, it's more about the country. And Congressman Kinzinger, when the president stepped over the line, and he still supports the president and he's still a Republican and a good Republican, but he did point out when the president retweeted a comment that we're going to go to civil war if he's impeached, he stepped out and said, you know, you can't say that. That you've got to put country first, and that's what this is all about. And I think we lose that in the day-to-day mess like what we saw yesterday. Kind of the temper tantrum in the press conference.
Now, Adam Kinzinger stepping out of line from the Trump narrative is somewhat being punished in the way that the Trump administration has said who's going to be representing the Illinois Republicans in the reelection campaign. Mentioned all of the Illinois congressional Republicans were mentioned, but Adam Kinzinger's name was left off. Is that something significant?
Having done a couple of those and the requirements in Illinois to get on the ballot, that's probably a blessing in disguise. Right. That is a thankless job. But I'm not sure if it was or not, but I give the congressman credit for putting country first. He's a military guy. He said, I don't relish attacking the commander-in-chief of my party, but when it's necessary to do it, I'll do it, because representing my district and representing the country is more important than the political debate.
I don't think it's surprising. We know that Trump is a petty, petty, small man without a lot of courage.
You're going after him,
so
today.
You know, to play those kind of games. Well, he's just a silly, silly person that we have to live through this moment.
Okay, so let me ask this. This is something I read a lot about, and this whole thing is really about a deep state conspiracy. This really is. But this is this is why you have your Secretary of State and your vice president and Rudy Giuliani traversing the world to uncover deleted emails to prove that the Russian collusion story was a setup. But Pat, this is not something that I think a lot of people might laugh and chuckle and say this is the internet gone wild. But this, there are a lot of smart and powerful people that believe this theory.
Oh yeah, I've got very smart friends, very successful friends that believe this is a deep state conspiracy. And give credit to the networks that put that out every night. If you watch Fox News every night, you'd believe it's a deep state conspiracy. My only perspective on that is many years ago when I was at the Justice Department, I was in a very high level, I was a low man on the totem pole, but we had every investigative branch in the country sitting in the room along with the Justice Department. And I came out of that meeting thinking to myself, the government can't conspire to order paperclips.
I think that's
not how it's just, there's too much infighting or whatever.
Anybody who's been in any government position, the notion that they could keep a secret like that
or conspire or agree.
Now, having said that, we all know Elvis is alive and living on Mars with Marilyn Monroe and James Dean.
Jim Morrison.
And Jim Morrison stops by, and they are plotting this whole thing.
Okay, so final thoughts here. As we'll find out what happens today on Capitol Hill and tomorrow when it comes to subpoenas, where do you see this story heading into the weekend and to next week?
Well, I think there's a momentum that the House is trying to capitalize on in this moment where I think Trump is desperate. The reason he's attacking the whistleblowers, he doesn't want a jailbreak where all these other people start to come forward and testify. And I think you're starting to see some of these people doing that, and that's dangerous for Trump.
I think the other danger is you're getting some bad economic numbers, and if you're going to see people, if the economy goes south, they're going to jump a lot quicker. Mm.
Pat Brady, Eric Edelstein, join us every Thursday here on the Steve Cochran Show, and they do such a great job with us. Thanks, guys, for being here, and we'll talk to you next week. Dean Richards coming up here on the Steve Cochran Show. Talk with him. Of course, we'll get his. I think we're going to get his review for The Joker on Friday, but I've already got my ticket, so I'm going to be at that movie for sure.
I'm super excited to see it, too, even though it's controversial, but I think it's going to be pretty incredible.
Yeah. And remember, you can't wear a mask or a Joker face to the
bummer.
Movie either.
Bummer. Also, we'll talk about a new virtual reality haunted house that has come to Old Orchard. It actually started this week. We'll talk about whether or not VR is the future of haunted houses for Halloween. It's 720 WGN. Stay with us.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey, you know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood, or kiss me good.
Dean Richards joins us every day at 8 o'clock to talk about the latest coming out of entertainment news in Hollywood. Dean, how you doing, bud? Oh, no. I don't see. Maybe he's not there yet. Maybe he's getting confused because we're on time so much now because of the jingles and the whole thing. He's like, they're not going to call me till 8:20. So get to him early.
Wonder if he's traveling.
Usually when this happens, he's somewhere on your control board there.
Is he?
Oh. Or he's talking to Anna Balabala
right now.
Mm. It's a technical, so it's technically probably.
I'm not suggesting operator error.
Yes, I think that's what Dave said it in a very nice way.
It could be operator error.
When Super Joe has to come inside the studio and leave.
The big dogs are in the room now. Bob Ferguson's
office,
here.
So,
yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah, so he just when Bob Ferguson gives you the shrug, then it's on Dean's. It's on Dean. When Fergie comes in and he goes, there he is.
You
I just heard
been
him.
Cleared.
What's
Justin?
On Dean?
Well, what's on Dean? How you doing, buddy?
I blame Bob Ferguson for all this.
He shrugged.
I blame Steve. It's Steve's fault.
There you go.
All the way in Prague.
He pushed the wrong button.
Dean Richards with us, as he is every morning. Good to talk to you.
I was busy chitty-chatting with somebody.
That's what I said. I said
a nice leisurely conversation.
Who are you talking to?
You know what's thrown me off is, and this is with Steve, when Justin's filled in, he's always on time. But
that's right.
Steve has never been on time in the history of Steve Cochran. He has never been.
Dean, that is actually just what Justin said.
And now, I got it. Usually I thought, well, it's like 20 after. Steve won't be getting to me any time now. But this week, everybody's on, big time on time. So I have to adjust my leisure schedule here.
So the of course,
what did you say about me when I wasn't here?
I was giving glowing reviews.
No, he actually said exactly what you said. Justin was like, you know, I bet he's used to us not being on time.
I'm used to Steve not being on time.
See, I was trying to be diplomatic and not say anyone's name.
Right.
You know, obviously,
are we taking bets how long this is going to last? By the way, he's been really good the first couple, 2-3 days of this week.
Well, you know, we got to hit the jingles, and the jingles work. So
I think he is a changed man. I really do.
All right, so Dean, let's get into it. We got some stories to talk about. Tomorrow, we're going to get the Joker review. This has obviously become the big story about. We talked about it yesterday about just as this movie comes out, there's controversy around it, but really, when we get to it, it is a good movie, and people are excited to see it.
It's a really good movie. Let me tell you something. I have not worked as hard nor struggled writing a review as I have with this one. I don't think ever, because I really, you know, as movie making, as a movie, it's really well made, and Joaquin Phoenix is mesmerizing in this movie. Although, you know, some would say, I guess he was on some of the late night shows the past couple of days. Mm-hmm. He's been doing some of those appearances, and people say how weird he is. So maybe he's just being himself in this movie. But he is mesmerizing to watch in this movie, as is Francis Conroy, as is Robert De Niro. I mean, there are some amazing performances in this movie.
And I also, and to be honest, I'm a big Todd Phillips fan. He, you know, he as the director
from the Hangover movies.
He did Old School. No, but really, those are great comedies. And for him to make a turn here to do something that's a little darker,
so different from how we know Todd Phillips.
Yeah.
And the movie making here is incredible. But there is something that's so profoundly dark and disturbing about this movie. There's part of me that, you know, I wanted to take a shower after I saw the movie.
And
part of me was like, you know, wow, bravo.
But the thing is, it is a villain. It is. It's so hard to, you know, I'm not defending anything, and it's obvious when you come to these really serious issues in this world. But the Joker is the top villain in our comic books. But I mean, this is the guy who creates chaos
in the Batman universe. Yeah. Very definitely. And that's one of the other interesting things about this movie is that it's a prequel. It's really not a prequel. It's the origin story of how the Joker came to be. You know, if you're a fan of the Batman franchise, you're going to recognize a lot of things like, I remember that from the Joker movie. I remember that scene. I remember that from, you know, different things. So there's that. It's not a Batman movie at all. There's no Batman's not in here, not as an adult. You see little Bruce Wayne as a little boy, but you don't see Batman in any way. But it's...
But Dean, is this a sign of a good movie for you when you can't stop thinking about it, or you are struggling with...
I don't know.
You don't know?
I've not been, I don't want to say perplexed, but I'm sort of conflicted about giving this. I am going to give it a good review. I'll tell you now. I'll tell you way more tomorrow. But I am going to give it an A. I really liked it, but I have some serious reservations about the movie, about the timing of a movie that is so profoundly dark. Which I don't know if it's the kindling that would set off gun violence, as some people are saying, but it definitely validates gun violence. It definitely it expresses it as the Joker's form of conflict resolution.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's that. And I don't
Which
know.
Is, I mean, maybe I would say is consistent with this character. This character, it's not like they decided to take a happy character and make it violent. He's always been. It's just, you're right. It's the context in which
we remember the Jack Nicholson version of the Joker, and he didn't think twice about just pulling a gun out and shooting somebody.
Right.
You know, and then laughing about it. This portrayal is less comedic. Not comedic, less comic book like than the Jack Nicholson version. It's closer to the Heath Ledger version, but even darker than the Heath Ledger version. Plus, we're living in these times now where every week there's a new mass shooting someplace. There's some crazy person someplace that is living in their own reality and somehow think getting a gun and shooting up a school or a church or a concert or some public place is the way to resolve conflict. It's just so you know, maybe the, just the part of it is the timing of it, I think.
Yeah, that I think so.
That's like creepy to me. That it's too much like that going on.
Right, I have now to say, as a, you know, my son gets into comics and we have the big DC encyclopedia and you go through the history of the Joker, because this movie doesn't follow the comic book. It's a kind of a one-off. You read the stuff and you look at some of the old comic books or even the portrayals of a Joker, it is dark and sinister. I think that the Warner Brothers and whoever did DC in the 80s and 90s with Jack Nicholson, and a little bit to what they did with the Christian Bale movies and Heath Ledger, but they kind of Hollywooded it up.
Yeah, this seems more like reality.
Yeah,
right?
There's a lot of sinister darkness in the history of this character.
Yeah. Well, all right. It's there in spades. There you go. With this one.
Dean Richards got more to talk about in Hollywood. We're going to talk about Placido Domingo coming up here. We're also going to talk about the Muffs lead singer who died and R. Kelly and more here. More on entertainment with Dean Richards. We'll take a quick break, though.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richards, the entertainment editor. Channel 9720.
Dean Richards with us here in 720 WGN. Steve Cochran, Trump, Justin Kaufman filling in for Steve. Steve will be back next week. He's in Prague with the Blackhawks.
Allegedly.
Placido Domingo.
Placido Domingo.
Always good to have him in the news.
I think he would disagree with that. Right. Once you hear the story, now it's 2 weeks in a row that he has lost jobs. This time he stepped away from his job as the general director of the Los Angeles Opera. There have been about 20 different sexual harassment allegations now against him. People who have come forward, women who have come forward saying that they were harassed, groped, or that he forced himself on them. So he's denying the allegations, but he says that the accusations are making it difficult for him to do his job with the LA Opera. So he quit. Last week he was asked to leave the Metropolitan Opera in New York for the same reason. He has no other concert dates at this time, so we'll see.
Yeah, this dude. It's weird because, you know, when you think about opera and you know, obviously there's such great opera that is done around this country and around the world, really. But Placido Domingo is one of the biggest stars of that, and to have this scandal around him to people who may not be fans or people who only know opera through the mainstream, it's not good for the whole art form, because they really, Placido Domingo, as you just mentioned, LA Opera, Met, he's all over the place in this way that, because he's such a big name, you know, he obviously attracts multiple jobs.
Yeah, and he was part of, you know, the original tenors with Luciano Pavarotti, and you know, he's you know, one of the few names that the general public knows. If you're not into opera, you probably know these names, including Placido Domingo. I don't know. I struggle to understand all of this, whether it's Cosby or Kevin Spacey or Harvey Weinstein. You know, who it is who thinks that they're so big that they can do that to anybody. It's shocking.
They should give Domingo's job to the homeless opera singer,
right?
Who's going viral?
Well, I did see. Yeah,
that's a fantastic idea. Mm-hmm.
Who got a recording contract?
Yeah, that's a new turn in this whole story. This is the woman who was just recently made homeless. She had increasing medical bills, and you know, this is actually a very common lesson when somebody, their life is going okay. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, things change in their life. She happened to have tons of medical bills and found herself losing her home and losing everything and living on the street. She was in the L.A. subway system, and somebody shot a video of her singing beautifully opera. The video went viral. It must have like a million views by now, because everybody has been posting it and reposting it. Somebody, a music producer in L.A., saw it, found her, and gave her a recording contract. So happy ending to that story. But here, you know, another fold to this whole thing is that just a few hours ago, maybe like 6 hours ago, the policeman who was the one who shot the original video, saw her in the subway, shot the original video. They met for the first time. embraced, and that video now is going viral.
So the question, who videoed that video? Okay.
Right. So tomorrow, the person who shot that video will then go viral from there, right?
All right, let's keep going. The Muffs lead singer dies. The Muffs, a good band, but this is becoming a big story because she was pretty young.
Yeah, she, 56 years old. The lead singer of this group that had so many hits in the early 90s, maybe the biggest among them, Kids in America, that was also part of the soundtrack of the movie Clueless. The lead singer, Kim Shattuck, who has been living with the neuromuscular disease, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, ALS, or Lou Gehrig's disease, lost her battle yesterday, 56 years old.
Yeah. And R. Kelly is in the news again. This it's not the only time R. Kelly's in the news when it comes to legal things. This has to do with a New York City court date. It seems like this guy's going to have court dates in every state that he ever stepped foot in.
Yeah, well, he's in jail here in Chicago right now. But another trial is awaiting him, in which his attorneys were arguing yesterday that he should not go to jail for that. They were motioning for his release. The federal judge in this case disagreed with his attorneys. The attorneys were saying that he's too broke to be a flight risk. Mm-hmm. The judge says that he didn't care that once he's done being in, on trial in Chicago, which will start in April of next year, then he will go to trial in New York on May the 18th.
And then there'll be Minnesota, and then there'll be Atlanta, and there'll be all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. It's a worldwide tour that you don't want to be
on. It's a worldwide tour.
Yeah.
It's a great way to put it.
It's a worldwide tour that any musician doesn't want to be on.
And before we let you go, the AIDS run walk is this weekend, right?
Yeah, it's Saturday morning at Soldier Field, just outside of Soldier Field. I think we're trying to figure out how many years that I've been hosting this now. It was in the early and darkest days of the AIDS crisis that we started doing this, and it's a whole different day for people living with HIV and AIDS now, but the need is still great. Yeah. So you can either come out and walk, you can come out and say hello, you can donate online, but I hope you can join us. The AIDS Run and Walk will kick off. The ceremonies start at 9:30. The walk and run itself start at 10:30. You can go to AIDS Run Walk, no, AIDSRunWalkChicago.org.
There you go.
If you want to get more information,
you got it.
I think that's what
it is. A great event hosted by Dean every year. Yep. Dean, thanks for joining us, bud.
See you on time tomorrow. Hey, try to be on time tomorrow, will you?
Take care.
Bye.
Creepy music from Super Joe, of course. Steve Cochran Show here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in for Steve today, but the gang's all here. G and Dave and Steve and Mary. We're going to talk a little Halloween as a very... I'm blown away by this concept. That, you know, obviously we've heard so much about virtual reality.
Mm-hmm.
And this idea that this could be the future and, you know, you see the masks and you put the masks on at the mall or whatever.
I need you to explain this to me. I was reading about it, but I couldn't quite wrap my head around it.
So there's virtual reality is one of the technologies that I think we're seeing a lot of entrepreneurs play in that space. They feel like that's going to be the future of gaming. It's going to be the future of how we interact with things. There are many that say that like offices and organizations will adopt this because you don't have to be in the same room anymore.
But
Mass VR is a company in Skokie, and they're one of the more high-end game companies that is really investing in virtual reality. They have they've taken the technology and created a haunted house.
Do you know how much this terrifies me? Because I once had to do a live shot from a haunted house, and the entire time I was just screaming at the top of my lungs. It was the most terrifying.
It's terrifying.
I mean, like, this was
like
a good haunted house. Yeah. This was the kind of haunted house. It was in the burbs, and they do movie 3D effects, so everything in the house. There was even a creepy woman crawling on the ceiling.
Wow.
I lost years off my life.
Well, this just looking at the demos, starting this month, Hollow Realm is the name of it. It's a virtual reality haunted house at Old Orchard. And so they're taking a huge part of Old Orchard, 16,000 square feet, and creating a virtual reality haunted house.
So do you go to haunted houses?
I do not.
This is something. Okay. See, I don't I can't volunteer for that because I live alone and then I would have to check every closet and under my bed every time I entered my apartment and went to bed.
I have a 12-year-old and at some point or another, I think haunted houses has to be a point of, you know, a passage, a rite of passage in some
form.
No,
I just need a cute old-timey fashioned one where someone just goes around the corner.
I think every mall is going to be made into a haunted house because they're all emptying out.
Well, this is a great way to
so
do
it's
it.
Perfect in a
and
mall.
Chris Lai, who is the he's the guy behind Mass VR and Hollow Realm, which is at Old Orchard Shopping Mall, is on the line with us. Chris, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So did I you're listening to that, did I sum this up? I mean, is this a way that to see virtual reality being used for this kind of event, this idea of a haunted house? Is this a way that we might see virtual reality in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, virtual reality has such great application. It has the ability to transport you into worlds that are impossible to recreate in the real world. And we thought, what better way than to demonstrate this technology than through a haunted house type of experience? For us, we're about free-roaming VR. So you've seen a lot of VR where you're either at home or you're kind of sitting, or at the mall where you're sitting down, maybe even ones where you stand up. But ours, you actually move around, right? Mm. So within like 5 minutes of movement, you are convinced, 100% convinced you are there. So we see a lot of people walking around, and then they lift up their goggles. They're like, okay, I'm still here at the mall. I have not been transported into this abandoned school. Okay, I'll safely come back into it again.
So, Chris, how does this work? So, like, if I come and want to experience this, I will just grab you give me the goggles, and then I just sit there in a chair or stand up, or I'm just empty room?
No. So you and 20 other people can all come, and you suit up in the backpack. The backpack has a high-end computer in it, and then you put on your headset, and then you're divided into two teams. One team are the ghosts, and the other team are ghost hunters. And the ghost hunters, you have this like taser thing with a flashlight on it, and you go and you get transported into this abandoned school. I mean, it's a massive school. So even though you're in 16,000 square feet, you'll feel like a 100,000 square feet school, right? We have tricks to make it feel and you walk freely, and then you start adventuring through this place, and you're hunting for ghosts, which are being played by your friends on the other mm-hmm. side. And you have four ammunition cartridges that shoot out like high electric pulse, like a taser. Hmm. And you're with your flashlight, and if a flashlight starts flickering or you start hearing a heartbeat sound, which isn't your heartbeat, but we play this heartbeat sound, and then we have this haptic in the back that will vibrate, right? And so you feel it, and you know they're here somewhere. And then you have to shoot the electric blast to hopefully get them.
It's laser tag meets the Fortnite.
This sounds like the movie. Did you see the movie Ready Player One?
It
sounds like a scary like version of like when they go into that house. Like when oh my goodness, my hands, my palms are sweating already.
But there is something, Chris, there is something about that. Ready Player One sees a futuristic world in which video games and virtual reality are kind of meshed with how we live our lives. And this doesn't seem that far off from that. Even though this is a game and this is a haunted house, if you will, Hollow Realm, there is something to be said about this being the future technology.
Absolutely, it's the future, and Ready Player One paints that as like that's the norm, right? We pioneered this, and we allow people to be able to do this beyond just a little square footage where you interact with people and move around. And so we see this being something that people are going to want to do more and more. And I know there's been a lot of talk about VR at home, and it has its place, but limitations, obviously, right? Ready Player One paint says you can move, and you're not really moving. And that's where you get kind of sick mm-hmm. when you put on a VR headset mm-hmm. and you produce motion, but your body's still, you get motion sickness. It's the opposite of the motion sickness you get in a car, where you're moving, but then you're reading something that's still.
Right.
So your brain thinks you're still, but your body feels the motion.
Which is why
so
you move in this thing.
Right? Is what
but
makes
now,
you right. sick.
Chris, since you are moving around in this experience, will you potentially run into somebody else that's like in there with you? that you're hunting?
No. Yeah. So that's the beauty of what we did. We actually have we developed technology, and we have it patent pending to allow you to have a collision avoidance.
Oh,
so
wow!
So you see each other and you can avoid each other. And the bigger novelty that we've been able to do is that the ghost and the ghost hunters are in separate rooms, but you're playing in the same virtual room. So the ghost, when you play as ghosts, you don't have a weapon. You just have your hand. You can see your hand. And if you stand still, you vanish. So no one can see you.
Well, I would be screaming at the top of my lungs the entire time.
So when you reach out and touch somebody, right, you can reach out and they're not there. Right, and that's how you grab them, and they get sucked into this black hole. But if you're, but you see other ghosts, and if you reach out and touch other ghosts, they're actually there. Same thing with ghost hunters. Like, if you reach out to your partner and you say, this is pretty cool. You can high five each other. So you're like, okay, that's really somebody there with me. Okay, that's good. I'm going to keep adventuring along. But Chris, the ghosts, they can run right through you, just like they're ghosts.
You know, when you talk about a regular haunted house, obviously there are precautions that are in place. Mm-hmm. And you know, if I'm too scared, I can get out the side door or something like that. How do you do it in this situation? Is it just take the goggles off?
Yeah, you just lift up the goggles. Okay. That's what I see. A lot of people lift up their goggles. They're like, oh, okay, I'm okay.
And Chris, I need to know, like, these ghosts, is this like ghosts, like a white sheet over a person? Like, what kind of, how scary? Is it a zombie? Like, what do these ghosts look like?
So when we decided at the very beginning, we wanted to go classic horror. We didn't want to go the blood and guts and kind of disturbing. Mm-hmm. We wanted to go the classic horror. And so the ghosts, they kind of look like the girl from The Ring or The Grudge.
You're
in this abandoned school, so they don't do anything. They just look really creepy, and it's dark.
Oh, no,
right?
I'm terrified. So
they don't do anything, G.
Like the ghost in The Shining,
they just
you
look
mean?
Scary.
Like holograms?
They're coming up. No, the girl in The Ring, like her hair's like in her face.
Oh.
She looks demonic.
Oh.
She's like, her body's all twisted. Oh, I'm terrified.
We need to do this as a field trip. Morning show field trip.
I think G needs to do this.
Yeah, you guys should definitely come down and do it.
No. I'm terrified. I mean, this sounds amazing. Let me know when you have a virtual reality experience that takes me to like Fiji or something. And I'm surrounded by like, you know, models. Like, I don't know.
Well, that's not too far off, right? I mean, virtual reality vacations and you know, everything in between. A lot of what sci-fi has said is going to happen to society is coming true, right, Chris?
Yeah, you know, a lot of things that they, you know, everything that they depict in sci-fi movies and sci-fi novels are slowly coming to fruition. Just a slight variation, you know, like when Star Trek, they had the comms. Now we have smartphones, you know, that can do everything for you. So they dream of the future, and then what happens is it's fairly close sometimes.
Hmm. Now, you know, this is obviously pretty scary. I don't know if this is there an age limit? Is it what do you do? Do you consider this to be a rated R experience?
So it's really we say 12 and up because there's no blood, there's no guts. You see this ghost, and it doesn't do a lot except for it runs up to you and like kind of runs through you, right? And then you're
through me and then inhabits my soul and stays with me to terrorize me at night during my nightmares.
So we see, you know, we've already had some people come through and test it, and to make sure that, you know, parents are good with their kids being able to play this. And so, we had one, family come in the other day and they had an 8-year-old. I go, you sure you want him to play this? Cause we have another game. We have VR Champion. That's more like Halo-ish type of game, yeah, right. You know, blue versus red. They're like, no, he'll be fine. Okay. What? Why don't they play as the ghost? Because they don't really, they'll just see people in hazmat suits.
Right. Yeah.
He played both. It was a bunch of kids. They both played both. And I said, I asked him, I'm like, they're okay? He's like, no, they had all a great time. And I'm like, okay, that's good. We did our job. We wanted to be still, we didn't want it to be rated R. We wanted it to be where, because it's so immersive. You feel like you're there. You're convinced you're there. People, in another game, VR Champions, you fly and you zip line and you can drop off of buildings. And people looked over the pier down the building. They're like, I can't do this. I'm like, no, just step down. It's okay. It's only 20 feet. Mm. You'd be fine. I'm like, no, it's not. Man. I'm like, just put your feet out. You'll feel the floor. But your brain is convinced that's a big drop. So when you have a headset on and your eyes and your ears and the motion, everything matches, it just seems like you're there.
Well, the future is now. Chris Lai is a guest and the guy behind Massive VR, which is putting out Hollow Realm, which is up at the Old Orchard Shopping Center in Skokie and Morton Grove. Thanks so much, Chris, for joining us and talking about Hollow Realm and the future of virtual reality and haunted houses. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you. Thanks for having me on, and look forward for you guys coming out.
All right, and G will be there.
See, he invited us. Yeah.
Wow.
It's
like the Matrix.
On,
it's like Total Recall.
Hold your fears.
Conquer your fears.
Do the other one where he said it's ziplining. That I would enjoy. No.
I'm not scared of that.
There's nothing scary about ziplining.
There's a lot. I guess it's probably more secure. People are texting, what about security or safety? And I'm like, all you got to do is pull the goggles off.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're in a haunted house, it's a lot harder to get out of a haunted house if you don't want to be there.
I would hate it. I don't like haunted houses where they jump out at you.
Yeah, right.
That's what I went to. Oh, yes.
Yeah. No, that's the
This
is more fun. You control.
The one I went to, I sat down in a chair. And the chair moved, and there was a person inside of the chair. The chair grabbed you.
Yeah. That's good. I don't know. It's like Total Recall in the Matrix, right?
Oh, my goodness.
I'd be setting the record for pulling those goggles off, man. Those would be coming off pretty quick.
Me too,
all right.
Joe.
Hollow Realm up at Old Orchard up through the month of October.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Steve Cochran Show rolling along here on 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. I'm excited because there are so many great proposal stories on our text line. There's so much I can't even, there's just too much. It's flooding in.
Well, I mean, what is the general? Is the general just that people agree with the study and they aren't so much for the...
Well, no, they pretty much just tell us their story.
Okay.
I think that no one's really weighing in, this is what I think of this, is what I think of proposals.
Well, in terms of, the public, on the, Jumbotron with, tons of people around you.
Most of them are saying, this is what my spouse did, and I didn't
I love that.
And I didn't like it.
Oh, you didn't, they didn't like it? That's even better. That's juicy. Now, so your wife told you what kind of ring she wanted then, basically?
Yeah,
you had an idea? Because, I think that's probably the biggest thing, the most important
thing.
Mine
was hilarious because, I don't understand how that works. If you have, it's so hard to not, Mark Carman's talked about this too, so hard to not have a conversation with your spouse about the ring.
Yeah, that's a big investment.
Because you can't just go in and throw so much money down and be like, oh, I don't like the style. So my wife had shown me an ad of the ring she wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And so I looked it up as the early days of the internet, early 2000s. And they only had the ring at Traybert Hofford, which is the Oak Street Buzz Inn.
Wow, sounds
jewelry place.
Fancy.
Yeah, the place you go in with briefcases and they got security guards at the deck. So here I come with my shaggy, the lunch break with my khakis, and I walk in there and they look at me and I'm like, taking out of my back pocket an ad from a magazine. It's like, yeah, you guys have this one? And they're like, that's not usually how this works. And I'm like, this is how it works. And this is what I want. And it says what the price is on it. So let's roll. And so then they ordered it through there. And that's how I got it. And it worked out just great.
It's like Neil Lane on The Bachelor when the guy brings the rings.
That's right.
Neil Lane. Now, it's hilarious.
Dave, because you're over 30 years together, do you upgrade your wife on the ring?
I have.
Oh,
I have.
Nice.
And in fact, I did it at a fancy restaurant. Remember the story earlier about the ring being delivered?
Yeah, right.
So I gave the ring to a server to bring it. I think dessert or salad or something. And I was just sweating bullets the whole time. I'm thinking, where is that ring now?
Because you upgraded her. That's amazing.
Yeah, but you're right. You're sweating. You're like, you don't like to put that in other people's hands, right?
She's my director of jewelry. I have no idea. Help me pick out the engagement ring.
That's hilarious.
It's true. Any man listening, jewelry, you can never go wrong with the gift of jewelry. That's, I think.
Yeah, but it's got to be the right jewelry, right? I could go in and I could go wrong. It could go absolutely wrong.
Well, no, I just mean in general, buying her jewelry is a good thing.
I feel like if I did that, it'd be like, I don't like this kind.
Duly noted.
Got to be careful, though. I mean, I'm not a big jewelry person. And when my husband buys me jewelry, sometimes it's like, oh.
See? There you go.
Yeah. I mean, I do have my upgraded ring. My beautiful upgraded ring.
Well, let's talk more about that coming up here in the 9 o'clock hour, because I want to hear all about the upgraded ring, because I have to do that soon. So let's do that. Coming up, we'll talk about the joy of mom, going from virtual reality to motherhood when it comes to online communities. All that coming up in the 9 o'clock hour here on the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
So Steve Cochran Show here on 720 WGN and CLTV. Hi, CLTV. I'm Justin Kaufman in for Steve today, but Dave and G and Steve and Krasanich and Mary Vanderbilt are here. And we're
Super
still.
Joe and Vivian.
Super Joe and Vivian, of course. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. I'm taking texts all morning. 480 says it was 47 years ago, but we just said, we ought to get married. I think we were brushing our teeth at the time. That's what the...
Oh, that's sweet. And Mary Vandeville, she was describing her upgraded ring. Are you happy with it, Mary?
Yes.
What was that pause
because
about?
Because at first I wasn't, I have to confess. Because it's very big. I'm not a gaudy diamond person. No, it's not very big. It just has more diamonds on the side than... It kind of wraps around
you
my other finger.
You deserve all the diamonds in the world.
But yeah, you know, after almost 35 years, I deserve it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
847 says, my wife does not like whatever I pick out for her.
Now, listen, I think jewelry is always a good gift, but you should know what she wants. You know,
is an interesting text. 847 says that talked to the salesperson and said, can you make sure this can be exchanged? When my wife actually returned it, it was the same salesperson, and she said, yeah, your husband said you'd be back. She was not happy.
Oh, we just can't be pleased, can we?
No. Well, we're continue to send us text 312-981-7200. That's our phone number. We'll continue to try to read as much as we can. Let's transition from engagements and rings to motherhood and motherhood online. I mean, there is nothing better that's used for the internet than motherhood. I feel like the internet is a perfect place to bring communities together. And in this case, the Joy of Mom brings together 2.3 million moms and counting. You see more than that?
It's actually 2.5.
2.5, see?
Vicky counting. The creator and founder, Vicky Reese, is here. And you said 2.5 million. How did you grow a community that large?
That's why I look as exhausted as I do.
No, you don't. You look as young as ever.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, my goodness.
Thanks for being here.
And it's wild because we go way back, and then I'll jump right into this. I used to work here my previous life.
Yes.
I just Instagram that, tagging you guys. And Dave, I know from...
Forever.
Just a few years ago when we were 20
years old. We were both kids.
Isn't that wild?
Oh, wow.
It's great.
It's great to see you.
It's so nice being here. And I love the new digs.
Yeah,
I used to be across the river. And I'm Bradley Place, not to overdate myself.
I mean, in case someone's listening and they don't know about Joy of Mom, can you just give us a brief history of how did you do this? Like, how were you at WGN Radio, and then all of a sudden now you have 2.5 million followers?
And I'm going to make this super quick because it's wild, and it all started at WGN Radio. I left there to write children's books on validating feelings, on feelings I didn't know were okay as a kid to have. You know, we're always teaching what we're learning and doing. And so Fannie Mae Candies was my client. They asked me to handle their advertising, so I had an ad agency for about 9 years doing Fannie Mae, Fannie Farmer, WGN. I was obsessed. I was Super Bowl Shuffle days, Bob Collins, Wally Phillips, Roy Leonard, Eddie Schwartz. I'll stop there. And then I had two miscarriages. I couldn't get pregnant. Thank God. I had my first of my three kids.
Wow.
My first miscarriage, I went to see a psychic, and she's like, on these 3 days, which was my 30th birthday, you're going to miscarry. Ooh. Not typically what you hear when you go see a psychic, you know, on lunch break at WGN, by the
way.
And then my due date for my next one was my 31st birthday. I thought, this is too good to be true. You know, so, and it was. But anyway, thank God I had my three kids. Height of all the negativity, Power Rangers, karate chopping. I'm like, what? Now we're hypersensitive to it. Back then, it's like, you know, let's plop the kids in front. You know, I just knew something was inherently wrong. So I went on this mission, made software, music, and video, had three babies, had no money, just a lot of passion, enough naivete to not know I couldn't do it. And they became bestsellers everywhere they went. Not a dime, not a penny for marketing. So it was viral before there was viral. And then moms wanted to join my platform, didn't have one, wanted to join my club, didn't have one, wanted to know what books I recommended. And I literally put everything on the line for Mamas to Cry for like my next 15 lives. And I just needed to build a platform. As a mom, I thought there needed to be something that was genuine, authentic, all about goodness, not about, I know we're in a sponsor-driven world, but it was about people who are aligned, who truly want to elevate moms. It was not about building me up. I'm not about having followers. It's about helping moms be leaders. And it's been built 100% organically. My husband just checked our reach. I just because our likes are, I mean, it's wonderful.
Right.
But we reached, just in the past 2 weeks, over 72 million organically.
How does that make you feel? Can you believe it? I mean, thinking your story is incredible. And talk about the joy of mom. And you fought so hard to become a mother. And you're an incredible mom.
Thank you. My son's right next to me. Thank you. He's still talking to me. It runs so deep, I can't even tell you, because I fought so hard to be a mom. And then in this, there's a lot of not scrupulous people in business. Mm-hmm. And I lead with my heart and my head.
And I think with social media in particular, and, you know, on the web, it's there's a facade and that a lot of influencers and folks present. But I think with you, it's there's always this authenticity, you know, and you're just very raw and you're very real about your experience and then making sure to share stories of other moms.
It's... Yes.
Yeah.
I do my live streams Tuesday morning on our Facebook with Bedhead.
What time is that?
It's 9 Central Time. And I'm in my jammies. I'm in my studio, a.k.a. my daughter's bedroom, who lives in New York now. And it just gives moms permission. It's like so raw, so real. And there's been friends that have popped on or like, I can't believe, you know, I could count on 2 hands how many times I wear makeup during the year. That was one of them. But it's just, we need to have a place that transcends, and the kindness and the compassion and the support of moms, not only for me and me for them, but them from one another, is it takes my breath away. Whether someone's had a miscarriage, someone's navigating through really challenging times health-wise, physical health, mental health, celebrating something, they have gathered, they mobilize, and we're finally launching our membership only 9 years later.
It's amazing. And I think about that when I kind of set up that there's nothing better for moms than the internet, because there's been such an amazing explosion of communities and connection. Mm-hmm. We see this on social media platforms, but also like in the Joy of Mom and their own sort of community surrounding. There's so much stigma that goes into motherly advice and the idea that one mom decides to raise their kid this way or another way, and it always inherently causes conflict. How do you deal with that with moms who necessarily might bring their own judgment or their own sort of advice to the table when other moms don't necessarily want to hear that?
That's one of my favorite questions, and one I'm not asked too often. It's you know, you are the people you hang with, and there is no mom shaming. There's no judgment. It's just, it feels magical. But I think when something is built with such love and intention and integrity, everybody wants to contribute to that. So our number one demo, if you will, in my radio days, is 25, 34, 35, 44.
Okay.
But we have all ages. But that's like the most, you know, from Facebook Insights. So what's happening, our moms are sharing what they went through. Moms like me saying, oh my God, you know, drink up this time, you know, soak it up, because you're going to wish you could go back. We just don't have the conflict. I think that's why we're a magnet.
And that seems to be what I would say sort of categorizes a lot of mom communities online. It's just that there always will be the stereotype of this conflict. So it's great to hear that's not there.
And it's, sorry, Vepta.
It's really about support, I think. It's really about saying you're not alone. We're in this together. You're going through this. I feel this way too, and there's no shame about feeling this way. Tell us a little bit about what kind of support moms can find.
And that was one of the main reasons that I started Joy of Mom, was I didn't want moms to feel isolated and alone And they are. We just saw something this morning. 92% of them feel like that. So as much
especially
because
usually they're like working full time, and then they usually take maternity leave to be at home for a certain amount of time as well, and then it's a total lifestyle change.
It's a complete lifestyle change. And whether they're, you know, working moms, stay-at-home moms, empty nesters, all those different phases, there's something, as soon as somebody jumps on and they're saying what's going on, and I can't describe how raw they are, where I'm like, are you, you know, I'm sure your husband's not listening. I mean, people will tell us about they want to get divorced.
Right, right.
They say the most personal things and share, but everybody's so respectful of it. So with support wise, we also have a private group that anybody can join. You just have to let us know you're not a bot.
Right.
It's not about the numbers. You know, we do have a few super, super dads. They've waited patiently a couple years to be able to be Yay. Literally accepted in the group. And moms, they help research. It's the best resources. What we're going to be doing is there's about 15 women we have right now. I always look for people that have really genuine, solid advice, wonderful intention, and are under the radar. I think that's where the sheroes are, if you will. It's not the ones that have the staff of 50 and look like, hey, I'm just you know, drinking my latte here with like 15 cameras behind them. We're going to get into deeper conversations. We have courageous conversations. There's this wonderful woman. If you guys ever want, we could come on. Kelly Cervantes.
Awesome.
Do you know her husband?
Absolutely. Miguel Cervantes. Miguel. Hamilton, the lead of Hamilton. And they have been very open about raising money for their daughter.
And their daughter, Adeline.
Absolutely.
Adelaide. And it's just, I mean, I met her through Sarah at Northwestern Hospital, Ann Burke's daughter. Like,
absolutely.
It's just such a small world of moms saying, let's help and support each other. So it's online, it's offline, but we're like a catalyst, and we love featuring other communities.
Well, what is this membership that you told Justin and I about? How is this catapulting the
whole There's
program?
A lot of things I'm scared to do on Facebook because I never want to be in a gray area. Of someone will call. I get a lot of times we've movie tickets. Well, my kids are in their 20s, so you know what I mean. Like I'm like any. They ask me to write things. Let our moms. We've got moms who are incredible writers. So they've all kind of taken on roles in our private group and have mobilized. Whether it's someone's birthday, somebody needs support, they want to send cards to it. They all this type of stuff. So we're going to be doing kind of. I don't mean to say Paul Harvey the rest of the story, but the rest of the things that we can do. On a membership. So when there's product reviews, there's samples, anytime someone gives me something, I'm giving them to our moms. I'm like, who needs this? It's like really the opposite of what's in it for me. Mm-hmm. It's what's in it for we.
It's an amazing thought, too. And I want to get too deep here as we get close to wrapping up. But when you think about motherhood, it really is always sort of encapsulated with the connection, this idea of the connecting with your kids. But it also, and we find out more and more, and I think because society is becoming more and more open to talking about feelings and emotion, it's also very isolating. And I don't know, that dichotomy has been one that has always been kind of, you know, like it's been shoved
pushed
into a corner, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I see more and more with these communities and Joy of Mom and others where there seems to be at least exploration of why that is.
You cannot imagine how pervasive it is.
Yeah.
We just had read something by this writer in Huffington Post, like we know dog poop, we know financial stress, we know this, standing all next to all these women at soccer games and, you know, on the field, off the field, and completely feel isolated. There's something about when you come on, you just have to find your tribe. You find your vibe and your tribe, and you know when it's authentic and it's real.
And I know it's Joy of Mom. I don't have children, but there are a lot of young children in my life that I care about very much. And like you said, the recommendations and the product reviews and other things, that to me, it's helpful for me as well. So
everybody is mothering. I think I gave birth to my two dogs, like literally. and we have mothers, and it's really there's a lot of women who aren't moms, but it's that whole, you know, female.
Oh, you're doing great
energy.
Stuff, Vicky. And where were you? My inspiration?
Yeah. Where were you 30 years ago? I needed you, Vicky.
Right, there you go.
Vicky, the only mom on the show. I'm like, oh.
Where can we find out more information about Joy of Mom?
Thanks. We go to Facebook, Joy of Mom on Facebook. We're also on Instagram. I don't do much on Twitter. I'll tweet me today and tag you guys. And on our website, which looks fabulous, my son did the whole thing. Thanks. Shout out, Reed. But it's a kind of a placeholder, but you could definitely sign up. And we're in about a month and a half, the new one's going to be up there with all the engagement stuff.
Bravo. There you go. Yeah.
And by the way, I just have to say one thing, mm-hmm. and ways for moms to earn anything.
Yay.
Coming, we're sharing.
That's so important. Right.
Talk about empowering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Joy of Mom is the community. Vicki Reese is our guest. Vicki, thanks for coming in.
We love you both so much. I love you guys, and it's so nice being here. Thanks.
Great to see you.
All right, coming up, Jason Rosenthal and the Amy Krauss Rosenthal Foundation. We'll have that conversation coming up right after the headlines.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Steve Cochran Show here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in for Steve as he's in Prague with the Blackhawks. Blackhawks, of course, tomorrow start the regular season. Big game against the Flyers. That's an afternoon game, right, because of the time difference?
Our time, yes. 12:30 pregame, and then the puck drop at 1 o'clock.
How about that? We're back to hockey on WGN Radio. So great. Some of the best broadcasts. If you listen to our broadcast team and to the post game and pregame, all that kind of stuff. It's great, great radio here on 720 WGN covering the Blackhawks. And, of course, you get all the Blackhawks you can handle in the morning show, including the Breakfast with the Blackhawk yesterday. Alex DeBrincat on the program.
Mm-hmm.
Next day, huge extension.
So you see a connection
I see a connection. I think that's the idea.
I think that might be a bit of a leap.
No.
But
yeah. It's going along with the theme today, Dave, you know.
If I were Dylan Strome, if I were, you know, one of the other young Blackhawks, I'd be like, book me on the Cochran Show.
Well, Strome's next.
Yeah. So that's what I mean. Get him in here, and then they get an extension, because they show they're multifaceted.
That's
they show
right.
They can do interviews and they can score. That's what gets them the extension.
I'd also like to book myself.
Like to book
get myself
right,
an extension. Right. You know
yes,
what I'm saying?
Yes, Super right. Joe. You were extended.
All right. Moving on here on 720 WGN and CLTV. Let's talk with our guests in studio about the Amy Krauss Rosenthal Foundation. Amy Krauss Rosenthal, just a tremendous person who was an author. She did best New York Times bestseller for both her adult books and her children's books. Also worked with her on so many other fantastic artistic creative projects here in Chicago. She died of ovarian cancer 2 years ago, which is crazy to think about. And that's nuts. Jason Rosenthal, her husband, in studio. Betsy Catton as well, who's the executive director of the foundation, to talk about the big event that's coming up on October 17th. Jason, great to see you. Betsy, nice to meet you.
Nice to see you, Justin.
Yeah. So, Jason, this is, you know, obviously this foundation is all about raising money for ovarian cancer and research for ovarian cancer. But, you know, to put on an event, the Amy Krauss Rosenthal Foundation, to celebrate Amy, it's amazing, and it's a lot of pressure because Amy was so good at doing this.
Yeah, well, we have a twofold mission at the foundation. On the one hand, we want to raise awareness for early detection of ovarian cancer, both for women and healthcare providers. And on the other hand, we do child literacy programming. So we are poised to donate tens of thousands of books to kids. And we've already engaged in reading programs around the city. Mm. So,
Ovarian cancer is very difficult to... early prevention is very key, but it's very difficult to diagnose, right? A lot of women don't know they have ovarian cancer until they have it, right?
That's exactly right. So if it's diagnosed early, the survival rate is more... 5-year survival rate is more than 90% if
wow.
it's found in the first stage when still in the ovary. So very curable. Unfortunately, 80% of women find out in the later stages when the prognosis is 20% 5-year survival rate. So part of our effort, where we think we can really be strategically impactful, is both funding research in the early detection mm-hmm. area as well as helping to educate women knowing the signs and symptoms of ovarian cancer.
I was going to just say that how can you do that? I mean, obviously there needs to be a change in the way that practitioners are approaching screenings and, you know, and how insurance companies fund screening, all this kind of stuff that goes around it. So how can you, as a foundation who wants to not only raise awareness but fund research, help to change the way that the medical community is kind of approaching this?
Well, I think training doctors is a really important factor in this, because the symptoms are, and it's important for everyone listening to know, that they can remember BEAT. B is for bloating, E is for eating difficulty, feeling more full quickly. A is for abdominal and pelvic pain. And the T is for toilet or changes in urination or bowel habits. There's other symptoms like fatigue and a number of other symptoms, and we have that all on our website. But the issue is that these have to be very prevalent. So those are symptoms that,
yeah, that
almost everyone
has. Yeah, right? Happen with PMS and other things.
All the time.
And it's not like with cervical cancer, it's not like you can get a pap smear and then that like helps the screening, right? Is there a test right now?
There is not an early detection test.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
And as you said, those are very frequent. If you go to your general practitioner with everything that you just said, they probably are going to say, well, you know what, it's period related or something. Go home, here's some Advil, have some fun. Yeah. You know, I just don't know if the medical community, and I know just being a part of my family with my wife, whenever she has any sort of symptoms like that, a practitioner usually is just like, meh. And so I don't know, how do you get the medical community to move in that direction and take this kind of more seriously when it comes to early detection?
Well, not only that, but women are tough, you know, and so they see these signs and symptoms and they just blow it off as normal aches and pains and things like that. So that's why we emphasize awareness, and that's what we're trying to do.
So the yellow umbrella party, which is so significant for Amy and so many of the projects that she worked on, what are we going to expect at the Park West? What are you guys putting together for this event?
Well, when Betsy and I started talking about it, I said to her, I want to do a non-fundraiser, because, you know, Amy in particular was not very fond of going to rubber chicken luncheon where people ask you for money. So by necessity, we're going to have to do some traditional elements to a fundraising event, but we're trying to make it a non-fundraiser. So there's
And Jason, how are you doing? How are your kids doing?
That was a quick segue.
No, I realized we were started talking to you and we didn't ask you.
That's very, very nice of you. I'm doing okay. Thank you for asking. We're doing well. You know, grief is a sort of long-lasting, unforgiving beast, and it's sort of unknown how that's going to progress.
It's a lifelong journey, right?
Yeah.
You have, Jason, obviously, this is terrible to talk about losing a spouse, but you have put together a TED Talk. And you have started to, you're doing a Chicago Ideas Week, you're doing other things about grief.
Yes.
And about how to handle it and how you've done it. How difficult is that to not just deal with your own grief, but then to be a spokesperson for it?
It's hard, but it's one of the most meaningful things I've ever done in my life, which is why I continue to do it. You know, a lot of people ask me, how can you get back to this topic time and time again? And it's, of course, emotional, but first of all, I don't mind accessing those emotions. It's important to me to remember those feelings. And secondly, and more importantly, I have resonated with so many people literally around the world on the issue of loss and grief, as well as resilience and how to sort of flow through this process.
You have become, because of Amy's work and because of Amy's piece she did in the New York Times about you, essentially saying, does anyone want to date my husband? You become, in a strange way, almost a viral sensation because of this. Does it follow you? Do people know you walking in because of that piece? It was Amy's last big, sort of big multimedia piece that she did before she died, and it was all about how great you are.
Right. Well, I mean, if you were to Google Jason B. Rosenthal before that article came out, you would literally find absolutely nothing. I wasn't on social media. There was another Jason Rosenthal who's a lawyer in Chicago. You probably found his office address, you know. But that certainly has changed quite a bit. I'm not.
Do you like it? Do you like that people know you for that? I mean, not necessarily that for that, but the idea that now you Google and you're all over the place.
Well, I think what I'm doing for me is very, very meaningful, and so if that means a little bit of public notoriety, that's fine. Yeah, it's okay, but I wouldn't categorize it as I like it, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it feels very, very meaningful to me.
You know, the amazing thing about the end of Amy's life was that you guys, because she went into hospice, she had the ability to plan out, and she's such a planner, and she was such an organizer, and she was so creative in doing so. In that experience, I would assume that conversations came up about what was next and how this was going to kind of play out, knowing what the prognosis was.
Did that help you? Did that help you with the grief, with the plan for what was next for you, the fact that you had this time with your wife to talk about those things?
Oh, without question. Yeah, and that's why I've really encouraged people to start the dialogue, you know, earlier when you're healthy, when you're in a good relationship, or even with your parents and siblings and friends. However, we didn't specifically talk about the piece itself. You know, we talked about the topic of me moving on and how she wanted me to find, you know, another life and another love and things like that. But we did not talk about the contents of that piece.
So you were surprised by it then. Yeah. I mean, do you sometimes chuckle to yourself knowing that your wife really thrust you into the limelight in this way? Was this maybe a parting gift in some way by Amy?
It's really interesting because it's morphed a lot since it came out up until today, 2.5 years later. And I think I have the perspective now that that gift that Amy gave me was based on her, you know, knowing me better than any human being in the world. And she must have known in some way that that would give me peace and give me the ability to, you know, find joy and happiness in my new life.
We don't mean to diminish at all your journey right now in this grief process, which will, as we said, last you an entire lifetime because you have to live the rest of your life without your beloved Amy. But the way that you carry yourself, the joy that emanates from you as a human being, it's very palpable. I mean, it's you do have so much joy, and I think it's incredible that you're giving back in this way.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
All right. So the event is at the Park West. It's coming up on October 17th. And as we, you know, as you talk about it not being a typical fundraiser, it's a nighttime event. There will be performances and other things. I mean, again, I come back to the first question about the pressure. Amy, and I've worked with Amy for years. She liked to organize events. She liked to put things on, and she was brilliant at it. Do you guys feel that pressure? I would feel that pressure. I'd be sweating right now thinking she's looking down going, what are you doing? Why this at the second? Why this at the fifth?
Yeah, we definitely do. It's we're trying to put the fun back in fundraiser, trying to bring her sense of whimsy and quirkiness and creativity and interactive. And really the idea is that we're all gathering together as a community. Mm-hmm. We're raising money for two causes that she cared deeply about, but we're doing it in as creative and fun and different way as we can, being just mere mortals, you know, and not having the background and creativity that Amy did.
Where can people go to buy tickets and attend the fundraiser?
So tickets are available through our website, Amy Krause, RosenthalFoundation.org.
You know, it's amazing, too, to think about your family because, you know, to go through this loss, but to think about your daughter, Paris, who is now writing, and she has New York Times bestsellers as well, and she's picked up exactly where Amy left off. I mean, how proud are you to be in that situation?
Well, I'm very proud, but, it's you know, there was also a certain amount of pressure, and we, you know, talked a lot about whether this was something that she wanted to do, not just because of Amy. You
that's
know,
good parenting.
Well, it's important, right? I mean, you know, she has had opportunities because of Amy, which is fine. And she wouldn't have those opportunities if she wasn't a really gifted, smart, you know, creative human being. And so I had just, you know, the tremendous honor, of course, as you know, of writing a book with her, which was
It's so great.
Fabulous.
Yeah. Jason Rosenthal, Betsy Catton, you can go to the Amy Krause Rosenthal Foundation website, but you also find the information for the Yellow Umbrella Party, which is a fundraiser to help with research for ovarian cancer and childhood literacy programs. It's going to be at the Park West coming up on October 17th. So get your tickets and support these causes. Jason, great to see you. Betsy, nice to meet you. Continued. We should come see you at the Ideas Week, which is next week? Is
that October 17th as well, ironically, at 12 o'clock at the Harris
Theater.
You got
a lot going on there. Week. That's great. Thanks for coming in, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
All right, that's going to do it for the Steve Cochran Show today. Back tomorrow. Another great show. Steve is in Prague. He'll be back next week. I'm also going to be on tonight on Extension 720, which would be great.
Double duty.
I know, right?
We're impressed.
And you're on for Nick also, I hear.
That's right. No, sleep at Nick's desk.
Tomorrow, Steve is going to call in, actually.
There you go. How about that?
How about that?
I want to tell him that I'll bet if you, because someone said, Ian was talking about Budweiser has a different name in Prague, and it's Budva or something like that.
Oh, that's catchy. What?
Yeah, I don't know. I was completely off on that. But it's some sort of different name. But it's also probably a premium import.
Yeah.
So if he goes in and says, I want a Miller Lite or Bud Light, that's way more than
he doesn't even drink beer.
Yeah, he doesn't drink.
He doesn't drink beer.
I'm telling you. I'm letting the world light.
When you go into bars in Prague in the Czech Republic, they don't have a big choice of beers. It's usually one or two.
Oh, there you go.
Pilsner or Kellen, something else. It's not, even though it's a beer society, they don't have a lot of choices.
Oh, wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't it be great just to walk in and go, beer, please?
Like they do in movies and TV shows. That's right. They never say a brand name. Yeah. I'll take a beer.
Unless it's sponsored, and it's like, I would like a Corona Light.
Right. Right.
Bill and Wendy coming up next here on 720 WGN. Good to see you guys. What do you got on the show today?
Oh, my God. I am a fangirl, and I'm totally nervous. Go ahead, Bill.
Oh, I love these shows.
No big deal, but Henry Winkler will be live in studio.
Are you kidding me?
No.
He is...
Unless they're
amazing,
kidding us.
He's amazing on Barry.
Yeah,
I just think that watching him on HBO, you realize what a treasure he is as an actor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You realize he's
a no.
And he also is amazing on Arrested Development. He doesn't get enough play for all of the time playing the lawyer on Arrested Development. He's amazing on that show.
I do love him and Barry just because of the subtleties of playing that neurotic, failed actor, coach. You know,
When you think about it, everything he's ever done has been really solid work, but he's so good at it. You really have to take a minute to step back
and notice. What are you guys playing? What's the game plan? Do you go all Fonz or do you roll to what's the plan?
Probably not.
No. I don't know that he wants to talk that much about Happy Days, but you got to mention the icon that is Fonzie.
Well, it's kind of like what you're saying. You guys are so good. It's like Bill and Wendy. They're so good. They make it look effortless.
And you can't ask Bill and you can't ask Bill and Wendy about Bill and Wendy.
Right.
Right.
Well, Wendy and I were the original choice to play Fonzie, and then at the last minute they switched it and put Henry.
I thought you were going to say the original choice to play Bill and Wendy.
No, we weren't the original choice for that.
Although you have to tell him about wearing your Fonzie shirt because you thought that would attract women.
Yeah.
Well, girls, because you're
a Fonzie t-shirt that I was positive if I wore it, no girl could resist me.
Great is that. Henry Winkler coming up on the Bill and Wendy show. I really do. I think that I don't know if he did. He win the last year, win the Emmy?
He won the Emmy, not at the awards a few weeks ago for the Emmys, but the year before.
He deserves it. I really just am blown away by his performance in that show.
This is a bit of a tangent, but we've been talking about it today. So, Bill, how did you propose to your wife?
Very quickly. I had the ring for 7 months. I kept it hidden for her for seven months. And then we went to Florida because there was a beach that we both love in Florida. I wanted to get engaged on the beach. And right before we went to the beach, I went in our hotel room to take one last look at the ring, and she walked in on me as I was gazing at the ring to make sure.
7 months of preparing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Last 5 minutes. All you needed was five more minutes.
Did you have an elaborate proposal?
Yes, it was pretty good.
Really?
He had the ring for a while, too, and hid it in his Star Wars figures because he knew I would never look there.
You don't check Greedo for wedding rings or for engagement rings?
And then we went to our neighborhood bar. He had a cooler with champagne chilling on our back deck. And we went out to Club Lucky because that was where we had our first date. Yeah.
They have such good martinis there.
It was a great night.
Wow. So nothing public, though. It wasn't like you were on a jumbotron or anything.
You're not supposed to do that.
Yeah. There's not only that, the embarrassment of doing that, but the fact that there are people like me
that don't care.
And the actor is just like, boo! That could ruin it just because I'm like, I want to see the double play on the field.
Right.
Sure. Interested in the proposal.
Right.
Right.
Unless you're getting engaged to Javi Baez.
Right.
Then
I don't care. You're a big time Cubs fan.
Right.
I don't care.
Right.
I don't care. I don't mean to be callous, but
But
you sound it.
But I sound it. And I sounded on the radio. Right. All right. Great. Bill and Wendy coming up here, and of course I'll be back tonight on Extension 720, which airs at 7 o'clock. All right. Here on 720 WGN.